United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Let's go! And it's just not cute. I don't feel, you know, I got my throat is sore. It's, like, closing up on me. I got a job to do. I don't have time for this.
Tracy, it's not how you feel. It's how you look. And you look marvelous.
Well, I feel absolutely terrible.
Say hi to Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Good morning.
Hey, you got to pull that, be the mic team. Pull it back. No, just take the whole arm and make yourself comfortable and pull it.
Good.
There
good.
You go. Pull
there.
It back. If you want to lean back, pull the whole arm. Pull the whole arm and go back. There you go. You can do whatever you want. The arm will follow you.
All right.
I'm so happy he's here today. Tell folks who he is.
He's Bill Mullane.
That's Bill Mullane.
Now, this is the only thing I know about Bill.
Yeah.
Is Bill was a former principal at Harding High School forever.
Yes.
Right.
And he has been he is an astute educator.
Right.
I found out that he started out in art. Didn't realize that.
You watch him draw. Unbelievable what he does.
And he has to do an elephant for me.
All right, I will do that.
I need an elephant. And so he's over there, and I'm going, what is he doing? And he's got all these beautiful pictures that he's just doodling. And I'm like, wow, what a great, you know.
I'm always amazed I can't draw a line. And I watch this guy because I sit in a lot of meetings with him, and I'm watching. And I'm, oh, my gosh, look at that. He'll do portraits of everybody sitting around the table.
Now, let me ask you this, Bill, and we'll get back to who you are. Because I'm one of those people, I'm not a good note taker, but I'm a good doodler. So while I need to be doing something else so I can pay attention to what you're saying.
That's it. I use my drawings to take notes. I mean, it works for me. If I'm drawing, I can keep my focus.
On what you're saying.
Right.
But I can't just keep my focus and just pay attention and watch your lips
right.
move.
That's it.
Yeah. So it's okay.
It is okay. It's a good way to to get through a meeting.
Because people don't realize, some people, I'm just not a, I'm not, looking, watching your lips is just not going to help me retain what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't retain it, I fall asleep. comes in the first place.
So Bill, tell us a little, because you do a little bit more now. I thought you were the President of the United States advisor.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not. But
for education.
Yeah, I should be. But currently,
yes, you should.
Yeah, but currently, I'm supervisor of school improvement up in Ashtabula County, working with the Jefferson and Geneva schools. So I'm doing a lot of work up there, mostly with principals, teachers. I do a lot of the back end of schooling now, Title I programming, Race to the Top, grant writing, those types of things. But prior to that, I was principal at Harding High School. I was also principal at Western Reserve when it was an 8th and 9th grade building in Warren. I was principal at the 7th grade building. I founded Warren's Alternative School, and I was an art teacher for 13 years.
Now, are you addicted to education, or are you addicted to work?
Both. I mean, I do. I enjoy keeping my feet in a couple worlds. I still stay very close to the art world. I still have a very close relationship and on the board at the Trumbull Art Gallery in Warren. I chair the Fine Arts Council of Trumbull County, and I'm on the advisory board at the College of Communication and Arts at YSU and the McDonough Museum. And I do a lot of work with Luzona over at the Butler. So I keep my feet there, too, and I'm working with Power of the Arts. Mark and I, that's
so
kind of how we got together.
So he's addicted to work.
It's good work. Now, you're also on the board of the Ween. Are you on the board of
Ween
Foundation?
Yes, I'm on the board of Ween Foundation.
And you're on the board of the Mahoning Valley Organizing Collaborative.
I just left.
Just left the organizing. Yeah. Which is really fun.
I was there for 7 years.
Bill and I are at the opposite end of the political spectrum, but he's just such a great guy, and we always have a good time. It's wonderful.
I can say that, yeah. And I never knew his politics. He was just a good guy.
I mean, talented.
And you know what? This is how politics is supposed to work. You're supposed to be on the opposite side and work for a common goal,
right.
Bringing both sides together to get things done. Because if you don't have the liberal side and you only have the conservative side, then there's no balance.
Right.
And it's supposed to be, you're supposed to govern from the middle.
Well, and people will ask me, are you Democrat, Republican, liberal, or conservative? And I say I'm contrarian.
Because,
you know, as a contrarian, I mean, I don't find a lot of solace on either side of the aisle because we're not really moving forward. And, you know, when I sit down with Mark, yeah, we do have some different approaches to the way we view the world, but Mark and I were able to oftentimes look at an issue and say, okay, first let's talk about the end. What do we want to accomplish? What, you know, what does this look like in the end? And then we can start working on how we get there and how you include as many people as possible, as opposed to starting from the position that we have opposite sides and we can't find common ground. And there are some things, especially the things that I'm most close to, arts and culture and education, which truly should be, to an extent, nonpartisan. You know, these are things that we really should approach from the standpoint of, you know, we may have different opinions as to what the role of education may be in the public realm, but there are, and as we just briefly talked about before the show, Tracy, it's you know, maybe we could agree that what we're doing right now just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
And so why don't we start from the premises to, you know, what we need to get to and stop dancing around the issue. And the things that today masquerade as educational reform are really kind of trivial and trite, which is why we're where we're at.
Bill, I've got to go back to the conversation that we had. I asked him a simple question, Mark, about education.
Mm-hmm.
And he began to give me information that I had no idea. So it's not about why we go from grades 1 to 12, or K through 12, is because...
Well, we go grades 1 to 12 because at one point the superintendent in Chicago, this is back at the turn of the last century, had 12 filing cabinets.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this
is interesting.
Yeah, there's no real... I mean, if you think back, you know, why isn't it 1 to 13? Eventually we added kindergarten, but, you know, 1 to 14, 1 to 7, you know, I mean, things just happen.
Then he said something about the sciences.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
why do you learn biology first?
In high schools in America, you go biology, chemistry, and physics.
Okay.
Is it because that's a logical sequence, or is it because it's alphabetical? Because... You know, I mean, when you think about application, would, you know, generally speaking, you know, I think most people would look at it as, let's get into the most applied science, which would be the physical sciences, and move towards a biological science, which really and truly becomes quite specific. Now, it's not that any one of the sciences are less important or more important, but in terms of logical sequence, we do things because we've always done them. I don't find us doing things because we think about them. And so, there's just so much from being wedded to an agrarian calendar to, again, thinking of what we want to accomplish in education. And today I find, you know, and we've had opportunities, Mark and I, because of the work we're doing in the arts, have had opportunities to sit down with Republican leadership and Democratic leadership in the House and Senate in Ohio. And the conversation is so polarized when it comes to the field of education that we fail to ask the questions that need to be asked, which is really, what could you do by way of reform that maybe wouldn't even cost money? You know, and I think of things like when you look at the American high school, and we have this right now in Ohio, there's a huge, you know, conversation about remediation at the university level and students getting to school. And the conversation is always focused on things like, well, the schools aren't working, students aren't ready. And then you say to, you know, and I had the opportunity for the last 5 years, I was chair of the Board of Trustees of Eastern Gateway Community College when it went from Jefferson Community College to Eastern Gateway. And issues around things like remediation have as much to do with, you know, the remediation industry, which grew up in universities because of the way we funded colleges. What would be different if you said in high school that high school wasn't grade 9, 10, 11, 12, but instead was a continuum of education starting in grade 9 and going for anywhere from 3 to 6 years, setting a set of rigorous standards for students and then allowing those students to graduate when they were finished. So if at the end of 3 years you finish high school, go to college for your first year for free. But if you need 6 years, stay 6 years. Or what about differentiating diplomas? You know, for the very first time, starting to look at high school and say, you know, oftentimes what happens, because 4 years is no longer as long as it was at the turn of the 20th century, but now 4 years goes pretty quick, and there's a lot more opportunities for students. So what happens if a student in their junior year gets involved at Warren G. Harding in the robotics program and says to you as a principal, geez, you know, I found myself. I want to be an engineer. And you say to the student, well, you know, you didn't know you wanted to be an engineer, so you didn't take calculus, you didn't take physics. I should be able to say to that student, stay here another year and take it. But instead, we've got a system that says, no, you know, let's get you out and you can go to college and waste your money learning what you can learn here. So a lot of times remediation is not a lack of ability. It's a lack of preparation because in 4 years of high school, students don't know what they want to become. So looking at high school as a 3 to 6 year continuum may be something that would cost very little or nothing, but would change the structure if you differentiated high school diplomas. You know, why do we give a high school diploma? What does that mean? You know, what does a high school diploma mean? But if you started to differentiate those diplomas, so a student graduated from high school with a diploma that says you have the background and the qualifications to go to the College of Fine and Performing Arts or College of Arts and Communication at this point at YSU, or you have the ability to go into social services or into English language arts, or you have a diploma that says you're qualified to go to the College of Engineering. Yeah, so why don't we just simply align the curriculum and give people diplomas so students know what they're graduating ready for? But those don't come up in the area of reform today. What comes up in reform is this polarized charter, non-charter. It becomes all of these issues that are kind of crazy discussions that never get to the crux of the matter, which is our structure isn't supportive of what we want kids to be able to do.
I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, I'm going to ask you about charter, non-charter, and I want to know why the charter schools have not taken on a different approach of education if we know that the standard form of education is not working. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. In studio is Mark Mangi, and our guest today is Bill Mullane, and we'll be right back.
Howdy, howdy. I'm so excited. Charlie Savin Barbecue Sauce is at the grocery store. That's right. You can get Charlie Savin Barbecue Sauce right at the store. That means you can put back the thick and muddy. If you can't taste the meat, what's the point? Pick up the smooth and delicate Charlie Savin Barbecue Sauce. Next time you find yourself down at the market, remember, Charlie Savin Barbecue Sauce, the full cup of love.
Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is now available at the grocery stores. Ask your grocer for a cup of love.
If you can't taste the meat, then what's the point?
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming, but Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own. That's where Turning Point Counseling can help for depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, personality disorders, crisis intervention, and more. Turning Point also provides residential services in our crisis stabilization unit for those who need inpatient care. Turning Point Counseling Services, helping you on the road to recovery.
Do you depend on your computer? Then you know that a virus on your computer is bad news. But there is something you can do. Just call this number, 330-759-9700. That's 330-759-9700. That's the number for Ambassador Technologies in Liberty Township. Ambassador Technologies specializes in virus removal and restores your computer to full performance. We also specialize in computer repair, from desktops, laptops, laptop screens, laptop power supplies, laptop batteries, and hardware updates. And when your business needs networking, Ambassador Technologies is the place to go. Ambassador Technologies, Youngstown's best for computer repair, networking, website development, and even low-cost business cards and publishing. Call Ambassador Technologies at 330-759-9700. Online at ambastech.com. That's ambastech.com. Boardman Frame House Gallery, a professional frame shop and art gallery at the Mark Shopping Center in Poland at Routes 224 and 680. We specialize in original, limited, and antique lithographs of both renowned nationally published artists and local artists. We have over 30 years of award-winning custom design and archival framing. We give your artwork a unique presentation that enhances its value for life. Let your home or office express something individual and unique with a fine art limited edition print signed by the artist and numbered. You'll find many unique and affordable fine art editions. Visit us in the Mark Shopping Center. Find the Greenwich Workshop Catalog. And for any print or canvas you order, you get 50% off the frame for that fine art edition. Find us on Facebook or call us at 330-758-5795. That's 330-758-5795.
The women of Warren and the surrounding areas now have a choice for affordable glamour. Charlie's Consignment Boutique on East Market Street in Warren has a fine selection of reasonably priced women's clothing, as well as clothes for men and children. You'll also find a great selection of shoes for everyone. Our consignment shop stocks jewelry and accessories and cosmetics by Mary Kay. Charlie's Consignment Boutique in Warren. Call 330-766-5778 now to schedule a complimentary facial. 408 East Market Street in Warren.
I'm Harper Keegan with your headline news. Salt supplies are dwindling in communities across the valley. The Ohio Department of Transportation in Mahoning County reports so far this winter it's used nearly twice the amount of salt compared to last year. ODOT plans to put out a bid for 150,000 to 210,000 more tons of salt to share with community partners, but deliveries could be 2 to 4 weeks away. So far, statewide, transportation officials say they've used 115,000 tons of salt. Lily Pond at Mill Creek Metro Parks is back open for ice skating. The cold temperatures the past few days have made the pond safe for skating. The pond will be open through February 23rd on Fridays 3 to 6 p.m. and Saturdays and Sundays 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. You have to bring your own skates. And Youngstown is looking at replacing all of its water meters, but City Council postponed a vote on hiring a company because the cost estimate wasn't entirely complete. The Water Commissioner says, though, it could cost around $75,000. For WSOM News, I'm Harper Keegan.
Saturday morning, the doorbell rings, and like many Americans, I answer it. I open the door, and there's this guy dressed in a banana suit holding a flute. Why me? I say to myself, why do these people always pick me? Then the guy hands me his card, A1 Banana Control. He says, you've got a banana problem, and I'm the answer. And I'm thinking, hey, pal, I'm the answer. You're the problem when a real live banana drops out of the light fixture and lands on its feet. Four little feet and hightails it right out the door. They sense my presence, this guy says to me. Then he goes piping around the living room, scaring bananas literally out of every corner, opens up the piano, tra-la-la's it right up the stairs. The next thing I know, the banana man is being escorted down the stairs on the backs of hundreds of bananas. As they stampede by, he flips me the bill and yells back, remember, A1, we are bananas. Imagine that. You just did. You saw it on the radio.
Get your business noticed. Call 330-783-1000.
1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
We're back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends. Here on WSOM AM 600. Huh?
Can I tell you what B is for?
What is B
you
for?
You don't want to know.
Okay. And I'm talking with Bill Mullane. Mark Manger's in the studio with me, and he and Bill are colleagues. They work together on several boards. And he's a guest of mine today, and it's just an honor to have him here. And I don't think we understand that some of the resources that we have here in the community that we don't utilize.
Right.
And I said before I went to break that I wanted to ask you, we have charter schools, non-charter. And my goal one day is to have a charter school. But the charter school will not be that which we see. It will reform how we do everything, because I don't think how we're doing anything is working.
And
I don't know why anyone else hasn't thought of that. I mean, I'm not that bright. I'm really not.
I think that what has happened and happened poorly in Ohio particularly is that, again, the whole issue of charter schools was not really about schools, but was about other things. And there are so many things that get put in place that, as part of the discussion, that we lose sight of why we even started. And so with charter schools, it's become a fight around union, anti-union. It's become a way to divert funding. It hasn't been what charter schools initially were intended to be, which were laboratories. Charter schools, as a concept, was the notion. There were two fundamental notions that really are important. One is, how do you create space within the public school realm for creativity and thinking differently? So how do you give a space where someone can rethink the school year, the school day, the curriculum, the way students are taught, and still have the means to measure it, so that if someone strikes upon something that really is working, they can share it with others. And the second was around the issue of choice, and how do you give a particular community the ability to come together as a group of people and say, we want to create a school so that my kids, our kids, can have the opportunity that perhaps they aren't being given especially in large districts out there, especially as schools were contracting and neighborhood schools were somewhat disappearing. So two issues. One is, how do you create choice? And two, how do you create laboratories to think differently about the nature of education? And in that context, it could have easily have been done within the public realm. I mean, you could have said to public schools, there are two ways to approach charter schools. One is within your public school system to free principals and free educators to have the options to do things differently and to be unburdened by what has become just such a rules-laden industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so one is to simply, within your school district, say to principals, say to teachers, and say to parents, you can come together in your building and pose a different way of doing things, and we will charter you to do it. You'll still get the support. You'll still get what you need within the context of the system, but you have the freedom to develop your own. That's one way. And that way, parents and students and teachers, administrators are freed from everything and given the opportunity to experiment. Another is to say to parents and students, and what happened a lot in our communities, oftentimes people within the church community would come together, see their neighborhoods, and say, we want to start a school. And that too, had a lot of legitimacy, and right. And then thirdly, Ohio could have taken the position, once they decided what their standards were, they could identify schools or school systems that weren't working, and they could have said, we're going to take your charter, we're going to put out for bid the charter, let some entity, private or public, come in. They should be nonprofit, but they come in and suggest, I can take over this school district and make it work. And then you give them 4 or 5 years to do so. With the students who are there, with the teachers who are there, with the realities that are there, and if they don't succeed, you take their charter and let someone else try until someone gets it right. But we dance around issues, and so we don't take schools, identify them, give people chances to experiment within them, and we shuffle the deck. So what's happened in Ohio is we've created 300 new school districts called charter schools. Everyone has a school board. We have given people choice, but the choice
is no better than the choice they leave.
Right, and sometimes worse.
Because I was on the school board when all this was going on,
right?
And in an urban school district,
right?
And I had major issues because the legislation was political.
Always.
And I am for school choice, but I'm not for school choice that's stupid. I think we ought to be competitive to where it's better and not to where it is mediocre, and that's what's happened with us.
It has, and I happened, in order to understand charter schools, I became president of the Southside Academy School Board. So I have a school here in Youngstown that I'm president of their school board. And it has been, relatively speaking, a disappointing experience, not in that the teachers aren't working as hard as their colleagues, albeit for less, not that the kids aren't just as needy and just as bright and just as, when you walk into an elementary classroom or you sit down in a library with a group of fourth graders, you can't help but be amazed at their ingenuity and they're just, the wonderfulness of working with kids. But what is disappointing is that because of the fights in Columbus on both sides of the aisles, we've constrained charters so that they don't look, feel, or operate any differently. We have introduced a misguided notion of profit so that we reduce teacher pay in a charter environment in order to create profit and now to create competition, which is false. Why we're taking 10% of that public money and putting it into public relations and sitting around tables now. You have adults sitting around tables discussing how can we attract people to come here. And it becomes like, okay, what are we selling? Do you have a better program?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing something different? Are you offering the students a real choice? Like here is a arts and science or, an arts and culture experience or a science experience or a different type of discipline or a different type of school year or a different type of engagement of parents? The answer is no.
I got a question, Bill. I love the things that you're saying, and I agree 100%, but I've got some reservations in the back of my mind. My wife was a teacher. She taught 35 years. She was, I should have been 40 years, but it didn't work out that way. She started teaching in 1973, and she worked at a junior high school, an inner-city junior high school in Lima, Ohio, and she taught home economics. There was an incident at the school. There was the school was fairly violent, and she would tell stories of the principals having to pin students against the wall and pull them by the shirt, and it was just an awful, awful environment. Well, there was a study hall, and one of the students came in late to the study hall. The teacher who was in charge of that study hall told the student he was tardy to go to the office, and the student told him no. and the teacher says, you're going to have to go to the office, or I'm going to have to go get some people to come here and take you to the office. To which the student picked up a chair and took the chair and slammed it on the teacher. And the teacher MF'd him. 2 weeks later, there was a school board hearing broadcast live on the radio where the teacher was publicly berated and chastised and punished for what using what was probably a normal reaction if somebody hits you on the head with a chair. And I was listening to this on the radio, and I said to my wife, this is back in 1973, if this is how it works, we're in trouble. And I don't think it's gotten much better since, because the discipline problems, the control problems, the attitudes of the parents have pretty much made education as I knew it growing up impossible. And I'm not sure it can be replaced with anything, and that is a non-class or cultural specific statement. It's across the board from the very rich to the very poor. And I don't know what you can do to fix that. And a lot of the problems facing our schools haven't developed in the schools themselves. They've developed in the courts, where the court said, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can do this. And it's a nightmare. I don't know how anybody learns anything anymore. One more story, and my wife taught home economics. And her classes were 40 minutes long. They had a deputy assigned to her school. And one day, the school administration and the deputy came into her office, came into her classroom and said, you have to account for every knife in your class from the beginning of the class and the end of the class. You have to mark who has the knives and who brought them back. It was only a 40-minute class. That was a 5 to 10 minute procedure at the beginning and the end of the class, accounting for the knives. And they basically threatened to charge her if she didn't do it. And I, you know, that was the time when we had a serious discussion. Maybe she just ought to quit, because it was reaching the point where it was impossible to teach. And, you know, trying to comply with the huge amount of regulations that are out there, you know, hamstringing the teachers. Now, that's in a relatively rural school. You know, it turned out it was an insurance issue, and we made some phone calls and talked to the insurance companies to get the thing resolved. But the fact that it happened at all, I think, is disturbing. And the show of force that went with it, do this or else. How do you solve those things? How do you get them to operate?
Well, I think that, first of all, I've got good news for you. I go into schools every day that are just remarkably calm, well-disciplined. Kids are doing great work. Teachers are doing great work. And I think what has happened as part of this educational discussion is we find the worst-case scenarios. We find a poorly managed, unruly school, or we find some of the problems. And even in urban education, I can tell you, as principal at Harding High School, that decade that I spent as principal at school, I worked with some absolutely remarkable teachers and absolutely remarkable kids. And we, again, need to begin to have a conversation as communities about, number one, what do we expect of our schools? We have to get to the point where we, in defining those things, then support them. that's, you know, and at Harding High School in Warren, Ohio, did I have kids get into fights? Certainly did. Did I have kids who were lost? Certainly did. But, you know, there's so much that you, again, what is lost in this political conversation, what is lost in our taking a set amount of money and extending it across 300 new schools vis-a-vis charters and making everything worse, is that we're not really thinking very deeply as communities about what our end in mind is. You can teach, and you can have really well-constructed, well-run schools where kids are doing amazing things. And I can cite across now three counties. When I look at the work of robotics teams that have come about, the first robotics team at Harding and what Gerard is doing with robotics teams and what Champion is doing with robotics teams in Trumbull County, and you go to those competitions.
It's
and
amazing,
you see,
isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely phenomenal what they're doing. What we have to ask ourselves is, number one is communities. When we look at, if you ask me how would you as a principal posit which students are going to be successful and which aren't, I would tell you that it's based on whether or not they're involved. And that involvement may be school involvement or outside, but I can tell you a kid who goes to church with his or her family are 90%, 95% of the time most likely not to have issues. They come to an urban school and they do well. If they're on robotics team, if they're on drama, if they're on the TV, you know, making the TV shows, if they're in an athletic competition, if they're in band, if they're in choir, those kids are all right. They have mentors. They have a peer group that have an interest in doing things. What we have to figure out is why are we allowing ourselves to diminish the schools in such a way as the things that were offered to me as a student are not being offered to our kids today? Why are we allowing pay-to-play to become part of this equation? Why are we diminishing the opportunities for kids? And why do we as communities not take stock of the resources we have and use them? See, my argument is that it's not that we don't have enough resource. It's that we don't use our resources well. We don't think fairly deeply about, you know, in the city of Youngstown, you walk into the Butler Institute of American Art and you have a major American art museum. Then you walk across the street and you've got a McDonough Museum. And then you walk down the street and you've got an arms museum. And then you've got a museum of industry, which is in a world-class building. You know, why aren't those institutions not only supported, but why don't they become part of the schools? Why aren't we have a laboratory in those places? Why are we recalcitrant to use our resources well? It's because through the polarization, in my opinion, and also through the fact that we just aren't really thinking deeply about what we have, you can solve these problems. You know, what you talked about.
Hold on just a second. I need to take a break.
All right.
I'm going to come back, and I want you to hold your thought. Write it down. Jot it down. Because I want to come back, because I want to talk about how we have allowed the arts to be ejected from our learning and not being brought apart, because I believe with all my heart the foundation of every good education is a creative artistic background. We'll be right back.
Okay, so you own a business and cash is tight. So what do you do when you need funds? Go to a bank? You're right. Waste a lot of time. Send tons of paperwork only to find out you need to personally guarantee your home, firstborn, and everything in between. Or you can just call the National Funding Group. Yeah, it's fast and simple. With a 95% approval rate and cash for any business purpose. Equipment, inventory, expansion, cash flow, payroll. Grab a pen or put this number in your cell phone. But call 1-800-426-6990. That's 1-800-426-6990. When you call, you'll find out how to quickly and easily get the cash you need. Up to $1 million with no collateral, no app or upfront fees, and your credit rating is not a factor. Plus approvals in 12 hours and funds in 2 to 3 days. Call the National Funding Group at 1-800-426-6990. That's 1-800-426-6990. This is by far the fastest and best business loan you can possibly get. Call 1-800-426-6990 now.
Realtors have expertise in land development and management, retail, industrial, office, and investment properties. They have the experience, knowledge, and savvy to help you achieve your business and investment real estate goals.
Realtors also have the power of the National Association of Realtors behind them, working with legislators and regulators to support the key role commercial real estate plays in our national economy. Ask for a professional who understands your commercial business. Ask for a Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Here at Pet Spa Salon on Western Reserve Road, we offer many services to our customers' pets, including bathing, grooming, nail trimming, and we even brush, bathe, and trim cats. Pet Spa Salon uses only all natural products. With 35 years' experience in the business, our expert staff works slowly and gently to put even the most fidgety pets at ease. Come into Pet Spa Salon and get your fur baby looking and feeling great. Open Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 1122 Western Reserve Road. Call for an appointment.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit aiwhealth.com.
Fit Family. Unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
This time, it's personal. The local talk show that keeps you thinking about local, regional, national, and global issues. Let's get back to Tracy and Friends on News Talk 600 WSOM.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I'm going to open up my phone lines really, really quickly. I've got a friend in the studio with me. His name is Bill Mullane. He is a lifelong educator. He is, I when I met him, he was the principal of Harding School here in Youngstown. He has a passion for education, and he has a passion for advancing knowledge in our community. And he still works. I have not found – it's really amazing. I asked him, was he addicted to work or is he addicted to education? And he says a little bit of both. And he is a former art teacher. And I'm going to come back and ask him some stuff about why we've done some things. And so, but I'm going to open my phone lines first. Pianki, your mic is on. All right.
Good morning, Tracy. How are you?
Good morning, Pianki.
It's really, really cool here today. I have opportunity to edit what I say because my words are freezing in the air, and I can dot I's and cross T's before they travel off into the ionosphere. But I like your guess on his definition of charter school. You're absolutely right. The charter schools was meant to let the individuals provide for their children something different. You know, here in St. Louis, we have a construction charter school where children can get exposed to the rigors of construction, commercial construction, and make a choice of what they would like to go into the field or not. But schools is the way they are, you know, and I'm talking from a perspective as applied to black and African-American children has been a total failure, and I don't understand how our ethnic group continues to let their children be railroaded in these systems. There should be a method of full vouchers so you can have full choice where a parent can set the direction in which their child go. We in 2014, I've been following this since Oceanville, back in Brooklyn, New York, back in the 1970s, and I've seen every different scheme that could possibly be. The way we educate children today in any society is just totally, it doesn't produce the results that the Americans are going to need in order to compete with the world. And as I said before, you know, everybody's state constitution allows the local concern to be control of the curriculum. But the definition of local control is now the school board, the administration, and the teachers. You leave the parents and the stakeholders out of it, which it shouldn't be that way. It should be their decision on how their children are educated, I think. So, you know, I commend your comments and your observation and your dedication, as Tracy has admitted to, but we just got to change things around. This just isn't working.
Hey, Diva, your mic's on.
Hey, Tracy. Hey, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just have to say, Bill, you definitely need Arnie Duncan's job for real. Can we sign you up for that, please?
Sure.
I mean, for real. I mean, I'm sitting up here, I'm sitting listening to you, and I'm like, wow, that's what we're missing. I have two questions, I have 2 points. The first one goes back to what Mark said about his wife and how she had to deal with violent kids in at school. I don't believe children are just bad seeds. I don't believe they're born that way. I believe there's something in their environment that is causing them to react, and their children, we call them immature for a reason, because no matter how old, even at 17, a 17-year-old senior, they still have not learned how to channel their emotions. Even some adults still don't know how. So my thing is, what can schools do to help children? Instead of gearing towards discipline, what can they do to help children more so? Because even if we think that it may be the parents' job, you don't know what's going on in that household. So in order to make the school work and function properly and make the classrooms more safe and everything, what could schools do to assist a child who is struggling emotionally? Secondly, as far as different types of schools, because I have a problem. My daughter, who is very, very gifted, very, very intelligent, she scores high on her state tests. But inside the classroom, she's struggling.
She's bored.
In some classes, she's failing. And she scored so high on her state test that now she's qualified for advanced classes, and she's actually a grade ahead. And I don't know what to do. I asked the teachers, what can I do? I asked the guidance counselor, what can we do? They're all at a loss on what to do.
Bill, that's you.
Yeah, I think that there's always a couple things that I talk to parents about. Sometimes we find that a child who really, you know, demonstrates in a standardized environment that they're advanced, but has a hard time in school, may learn in a way that is different than the classroom they're in, and or, you know, in a traditional environment, and there's some really wonderful examples of that. You know, if you look at I would advise you to go on to TED.com and look at Sir Kenneth Robinson's talk. Sir Kenneth Robinson does a talk in which he talks about this very thing, a student who was brilliant in school and was doing terribly within the classroom. And her mother takes her, long story short, takes her to a doctor. And the doctor talks to her, and the doctor remarkably says, look, I'm going to take you, I want to talk to your mom. And he says to the little girl, you just sit here at this table. And he turns on the radio, and he takes the mom out. And mom and the doctor are looking through a glass window, and while the radio is on, the girl begins to dance. And Sir Kenneth Robinson talks about this story about how the doctor looks at the mom and says, there's nothing wrong with your child. She's just a dancer. And the mother took her out of public school, and this was in, I think, Great Britain, and put her in a dance academy. And she became one of the world's most renowned choreographers. So you're right. I mean, we have to find out sometimes what a child needs. And getting back to Tracy's point, that was initially what was meant by laboratory schools. It was, how do you, within the public schools, create places and spaces for all of these children? You know, the kid who learns kinesthetically and moves to the sounds, or the child who dreams, or the child who can't stop drawing during science class. You know, that's the kind of thing we're looking for. So there is hope, and part of that is, you know, see, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the resources in the community. You know, go to take a child to an art class at the Butler Institute of American Art and put them there and see, do they shine in that environment? Find out what drives them educationally.
Hey, listen, I'm going to take my top of the hour break. Bill, I'll pull you up as soon as I come back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll be right back.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren, the home for afternoons with Tracy and Friends.
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yes, Alabama, we can hear you.
Hey, I think charter schools are a better idea than public schools. But why is it that they tend to, you know, take charter schools as being this bad thing? I hear that from a lot of black people. Charter schools are
because
bad.
Because the charter schools that are in our neighborhoods are not operating as they should. They're operating just as the public school systems. So what's the point of having a different school system if you're no different or no better than the one we already have?
Yeah, she telling the truth on that one.
I mean, because I think the St. Louis,
Alabama.
I'm not mistaken, but didn't St. Louis get like $100 million in some settlement or something, and they still, I've heard people really highlighting how their kids aren't really doing any better up there. They took the money and built these big schools, and they still struggling up there as far as education.
Now, the thing with charter schools, like Diva says, that and when charter law was put into effect, it would allow concerned groups to form their own boards, form their own school, and teach any particular that they chose. And that was a good idea. But what has happened, state board of education have control over who gets a charter, and they have been issuing charters to commercial companies like Beacons, Edison's, Imagine's, and so on and so on, and they just reproduce what was going on in traditional buildings using the same teachers and same ideas.
Okay. Because I think a teacher should be held, like, look, if the kids aren't learning, then you're not doing your job. I mean, if they fail a test, you shouldn't be like, okay, well, I'm a union member. You can't get rid of me. You're failing my children. And I feel like...
But to me, that's not true because my daughter is highly intelligent. But in the classroom setting, in some cases, she's failing. So if you look at her, you would think, okay, she's not learning anything, but that's not true because if you sit down with her and talk to her and have a discussion with her, she can have a discussion. She can show you something. It's just that the way that they're structuring the classrooms now, some of the students are not excelling because of how that structure is. It's not because they're not learning anything.
Yeah, that's why they need to have full choice. where a parent can have vouchers where they can send their child where they want to.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm pushing for.
Because we don't have any schools that are geared towards, in my school district, I would have to move out of my school district and move into the poor school district of Columbus in order for my child to go to their performing arts academy.
Well, if you had a voucher, you could just send your child there, period.
Yes.
And on top of that,
but the only way Ohio works is the school district, in order to get that voucher, our school district has to be failing in order for her to get a voucher to transfer to Columbus. But their school system, their public school system is failing. Ours is rated excellent. So I can't switch over. I can't send her to a failing school district from an excellent school district on a voucher.
And then on top of that,
I'm going to try something, Noah. What about just mastering where you are? Like, if you're in a poor, failing education system, make the best of it. Get out with the high. If you know what colleges are looking for, you know, invest the time. I mean, a lot of parents don't do this, but I know kids that came from where I was, and it wasn't the best education system, but these kids are very successful.
We're in a school district that's rated excellent. We're not in a failing school district.
Our district is
so small that I can't transfer her. I just can't. We don't have a school district that's geared towards different type of learning.
I'm gonna tell you a good way to get around that. Find you a friend or family member that live over there. Use their address. Bam, there you go.
Did you hear about the woman who lives in Akron who got arrested for that?
That's somebody being stupid. Folks, look, whatever. I did that junk all through high school. They thought I lived somewhere else.
That's illegal.
Man, anybody, who put people in jail for that for real?
They did. They put that woman in jail because
because they put one person in jail, you're going to let your child lose out on a quality education.
I'm not going to let my child lose out, but I'm not going to break the law either. What does that say about me as a parent breaking the law? What does that show to my child?
I don't even think that's – I don't look at that as something as a – that's like jaywalking. Like, really? Like, I don't look at it like that. I don't. I'm sorry.
You don't look at it like that. The fact is, it's still a law. And if you break it –
Okay. So every time you get in the car, I better not catch you going down a hill going 40. I bet not, because you're breaking the law.
I do break the law in speeding. I really do. But I suffered a consequence.
Aren't you being a bad example for your child by breaking it?
Because I don't speed. My daughter's in the car.
I'm messing with you. Listen, I'm picking on you. I really can care less. Just that's about how important it is to live in the right school zone to me. That's just about the same level to me. Like, I don't look at it like that. When you start talking about breaking the law, you're breaking in somebody's house. You're stealing. Those are the people. But when you're talking about a child and the education and where you want your child to go, I can't blame you if you use somebody else's address to go to a better school. I just don't.
I can't blame anyone else either.
Police ain't riding, knocking on doors. Okay, you don't live at this address. We're taking you to jail. That's a special situation where that lady got locked up. That don't usually happen.
It don't usually happen, but the fact is it did, and it should, but it shouldn't. I should be able to send my child to a fine performing arts, whatever money she was getting in this district that I'm paying for her to go to school in this district, that should be transferred over to her to go to a school.
Hey, we're back. And you're listening to Tracy and Friends, SLM AM 600, the number 347-945-5229. And sitting with me is Mark Manji, because you know, Dave, Mark knows it all, and it's Thursday.
Moody little music in
Absolutely.
The back. What am I listening to?
Her name is Jill Scott.
Okay. That's nice. Bill, you have to understand, I download more music here when I come in. Crazy plays for bumper music. That's nice. Jill Scott. Okay.
Jill Scott. Hey, Mark Manson, Bill Mullane is in studio with me, and Bill has been a longtime friend. I think I met him at least 10, 15 years ago. And I have always respected him and think he is a fine liberal.
Hey, I got a theory. You know, my theory has been for a long time.
What is that?
Liberals come up with the ideas,
And it takes Republicans to actually implement them in a way they work.
Is that how
it works? And if you look at the history of the various, you know, government programs, that's pretty much how it's worked out. You know, the Republicans have to come in and make them work. So maybe there's still hope for Obamacare.
I'm thinking the same thing. I was thinking the same exact thing because they need help with that. But he's passionate about students and education. And listening to how his mind works. When he first came in, he was showing me he's sitting here doodling, and his doodles are fine pieces of art. And I'm looking at this guy, and I asked him, because I have a hard time just focusing in on watching people's lips move and paying attention, too. I do better.
He's doing this on the computer. I mean, this is not a show. I mean, this is computer stuff, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I'm watching him do this, and I'm going, you know, so maybe I'm not crazy. And we have our learning that all people learn differently. All people, we're different. And you can't just sit me in a room, sit me in a chair, and make me look forward at a chalkboard and think I'm going to get it.
But you know, Tracy,
it's not working out that way. Yeah, Bianchi?
You know, another thing that we pointed out on your show, it was that parents, the public, stakeholders really don't have the ability to recall school board members. And if you got a school board member or a school board that's not doing or producing the type of results that you suspect, then you should be able to get rid of them.
But Bianchi, let me say this. Hold on just a second. We need to understand that that is a piece of legislation that needs to come from your impact on your legislative body. But because most of us are ejected from the political arena overall, we are allowed to have laws that you can't recall school boards. And I don't want to go there today with Bill being here, but I will say this. We need to educate ourselves on how to move our legislative bodies so that we can get what we want, so you can recall school board members. And you can recall those types of things. Go ahead.
Yeah. I want to also say to him that this called the Parents Association. Most schools have this. And parents can get more involved into the schools, go to these meetings, go to the big meeting, the board meeting. And if more parents are active in these meetings, the parents will see how much power they have in these schools. The thing is, the parents are not coming. Only the people who work for the PSA are there, and maybe one or two parents come, but it's not strong enough. We have more parents to back us up, to help us with what we're trying to build, then we will see the power that we have to make things happen for our schools, for our children.
And that comes from information and parent involvement. But parent involvement has to be a coalition of where we actually begin to educate parents and citizens on their civic duties of being involved politically. Because if you don't know how the wheels move, you will never turn the car. And that's where we are with a lot of things in our communities, both, you know, inner city, suburban, and urban. You don't know where to put the oil. And you wonder why the car won't go. You've got to learn this. And if you look at the voter turnout, when it comes to your local races that involve your school boards, you don't see a lot of enthusiasm. You come up for the president, but yet he's far removed from you. But because he's on television and they get you excited and he's got the money, you are engaged to vote. But as far as coming out this past year for the mayors and the school board races, and the trustee races and the city council, no one pays attention. And until we change that mindset, we will always be where we are. So we can do a lot of talking here. But as I say every day, everything that we touch has a political component to it. And unless you learn the political game, you just can't stand back and say, I don't like politics, because it involves your life every day.
Tracy.
Yes. Hi, Bill.
What's up?
How you doing today?
Hey, man, I asked a question during the break. I wanted to get your guest. Your guest still there? He gone.
Yeah, he's still here.
What are the problems with charter schools? Because it just makes sense to me. It's a lot better. How could anybody have a problem with school choice? I'm just trying to understand. That just does not make sense outside of the union stopping it because they want to keep the money there, but which is not for the kids. But I'm just trying to understand what are the problems. I've heard black Democrats say that they have a problem with charter schools, and I really don't see why that model fails when I'd rather have some sort of checks and balances on these teachers than just, okay, you just go to this school, the teacher doesn't care, she lives in the suburbs, her husband's a cop, you know, and she's getting him ready to be one of her husband's lockup, you know, people or whatever. So I'm just trying to understand what are the problems with charter schools that everybody tends to try to blow out there.
Hey, Bill, before you answer, Bill, and Alabama, let me say this. You have to understand every state has a different organization of charter schools. So I want to make sure you understand that. Our charter schools in Ohio are different than the ones in New York State that are different than ones in Alabama. So that all makes a difference. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, and that is a big difference. But here in Ohio, again, I think school choice really is something that we have to strive for. And that gets back to the parent who called earlier. In the 21st century, we have access to so many different ways of learning and so many different streams of information. And the careers we're preparing people for haven't even been invented yet. So, you know, this 19th century structure that we are trying to educate students in is failed on its own. So choice is optimum. There is a need for choice. In Ohio, the problem has been that we are giving people choice between failing structures. When you go to a charter school that operates in the same calendar, in the same hours, using the same curriculum, using the same structures, having the same rules, you're not getting anything different. What you're doing is, in Ohio, is you're taking the limited resources that we have for public education and you're spreading them so thin that everyone is ineffective. And that the things that we know work for kids, especially urban kids, which is to create pathways of involvement outside of the school day to keep them from their own devices, are disappearing through things like pay to play because schools can't afford to have their programs. We need robust recreation, athletics. We need to look at extracurricular and co-curricular activities through a new lens. And FIRST Robotics is a really great way of thinking about, you know, some 21st century activities where kids are coming together with engineers and scientists and building robots and having them compete. So it's not that choice is bad. It's that we are diminishing our resources and we're not requiring that our choices be good. And charter schools in Ohio, you know, have kind of limited shelf life in some cases. So one of the things that we're seeing happen in our larger urban districts is students leave for choice, not necessarily because they, you know, the parent feels that the school is better. Maybe it's closer. Maybe they can get a ride to that charter school that they can't get to their public school. And again, you know, as a president of a charter school board, my disappointment comes from the fact that the excuses that charter schools then make when I'm president of a school board and I say to the operating company, why are so many third graders not passing the reading test? And they say, well, you have to understand our children are struggling and we have this type of student. Well, I'm saying, so you're telling me that what the city schools told you years ago is true? You know, so, yeah, so I think we have to really start looking at what choices we're going to create, where we're going to create them. And we have to look at the fact that in the context of our country, public education is fundamental, and we are forgetting the fact that the role of public schools is to create citizens who are capable of using their enfranchisement, and that we can't lose.
Bill, how effective or ineffective are magnet schools?
Magnet schools, depending, again, where and how they're created, can be just remarkable in that they have such specific focuses. So, you know, the reason they tend to be successful is because you have a focus and then you go out and find students who meet that focus. So if you have an arts, you know, like in New York City, I would go shadow the principal at the Fine and Performing Arts School, which is located across the street from Lincoln Center, and it draws from every school in New York, and the students both test in, but they also audition in, and so you have a school full of young artists taking art. So it works brilliantly.
In New York City, they could pop. They can do that. How would that work here?
Here it would work in that we start to look at the structure of our larger high schools, and then we start to look at the structure of some of our smaller schools that really are in isolation, and we start to maybe think about merging some districts. And you, within your larger school, create sub-schools. So you have an academy for the fine and performing arts operating in the same building with the academy for science and technology, and the same academy for physical education and athletics and structure. You can do that within the space. And that's where, you know, when we start to look at the private-public partnerships, you start to look at the institutions that already exist in a community, and you ask the question, can our public schools figure out a way to create a sub-laboratory within the Butler Institute of American Art in Youngstown, where the students are in school for 4 hours taking their academics and then physically move to another space where they engage with art and culture.
Would that have to be done under the auspices of each of the school districts, or could it be done under the County Board of Education?
I think it can be done under a County Board of Education. I think that, again, the only constraints that we have within school districts are the constraints that we impose on ourselves. If you look at the legislation and rules that isolate schools, and you take them away and you encourage or even reward schools working together to come together to create academies across district, you could do so.
What do you think about private sponsors for some of this stuff? You mentioned public-private partnership. It would seem to me that if you're looking at some of the big technological companies, for example, they would want to get involved with the local schools to help develop programs to feed their needs.
Oh, I think so. And, again, it depends on the size of the community and the resource of the community. You know, you see that the Cleveland schools right now are have some really significant private-public partnerships. Reynoldsburg, where I happened to visit a few weeks ago, Battelle as a corporation has been integrally involved in the development of some of their laboratories within the schools, both in design and donating them, but also providing some corporate expertise to train teachers to teach in them. So I think those things exist.
Why aren't we doing it here?
You know, Mark,
it's provincial.
You know, Mark, you mentioned about the magnet schools. Magnet schools were designed to lure whites back into the city, into the urban district. I'm sure Bill can tell you that. And the thing that magnet schools fail was that they set a percentage of the makeup of the school. And we had here in St. Louis, we had black kids that stayed across the street from a magnet school. They couldn't attend because there wasn't enough whites sitting in the desk. And that lasted for a long time until finally a new superintendent said enough is enough. So, and to incorporate, to partner businesses with schools, that's a good idea. It is going on in many ventures, and I would recommend that very highly if you can get it to be a long-lasting relationship.
There's one in Detroit called Cornerstone, put together by a gentleman by the name of Clark. And he has a very, very successful public-private partnership for academic schools. Hold on just a second. 440, your mic is on.
Yeah, I only have a couple things to say. You know, no matter what situation you put a child in, if they don't have enough discipline to follow through, I don't care what you do. I don't care what you do. And that is the cornerstone of all the countries that are ahead of us in education. They are more disciplined than we are. You cannot act the way a lot of our kids act in class or the way they take school as far as how serious it is or not. And you know what? Their parents are to blame. Usually when you see a child act a certain way, the parents act a certain way. The apple doesn't fall too far away from the tree. You see it time and again. And until you get that straightened out, I don't care what kind of programs, what kind of schools, you're still going to have the same problem. You have to be disciplined in what you do, or you're not going to be successful.
You know, that's kind of the emotional response to the problem that we hear a lot, and sometimes masquerades as an excuse for schools. That the truth is, in any community, and let me tell you, as somebody who worked in an urban district, urban districts face issues that maybe suburban districts don't sometimes, but every district faces problems. But fundamentally, as educators, I think we need to start to look at what reality is, put aside the idea that we can retreat back into excuses and find those structures that work. It is true that we do have students who come to school who are totally ill-prepared to be in that structure, and that's where choice really becomes a critical component. I was involved in developing an alternative school in the city of Warren where we, you know, looked at, okay, to get into my school, you had to be up for expulsion. So it told you at what point in your academic career you were, and I was working primarily with high school students, some junior high. But, you know, when you create that alternative setting, you can even address the needs and the behaviors and the problems of those students because you now isolate them outside of that larger place. So, for instance, where in the public school where I had been previously, in the high school itself, you would never be able to say to a student, you know, you're here by choice. You don't have to stay if you don't want to because, you know, you can't do that in that large high school environment. But in an alternative setting, you can say that. And instantaneously, for my students who had a history that led them to expulsion from school of being dysfunctional, any pride and or show-offness that could come from saying, you know, acting out in school was taken away immediately by saying you don't have to be here. You know, rebelling against? So, I mean, we have to find solutions, and we can't fall back on the default position that there are kids who are uneducable.
So what do you do with the city of Cleveland schools? They are a total failure. It's not even close. They are the worst. If they're not the worst school system, worst in the whole United States, they're pretty close. And that was out in the plain dealer. That is a joke. What they're doing, and all they're doing is throwing more cash, more alternatives, and all it is, it's back to the parents. It's back to the children. You cannot lay all this at the feet of educators.
But listen, hold on. This is two-tier. Because you have to understand the same school district failed the parent that is now the parent. Remember, this conversation wasn't going on when it should have. So if you go through the 70s and the early 80s and then the 90s and now the millennium, you will see where we have diminished in our education as we have moved ourselves forward. And so you're right. You can't blame everything on education, but you have to also understand that parents in the 70s and 80s sent their children to school thinking they were getting the same education that they got when they were there, and they were not. And there was a major disconnect in the late 70s and the early 80s when it came to education. So that which those parents should have been taught about education did not get taught.
Well, you know, crazy facts say something.
I don't agree with that.
Oh, I mean, I'm a product of it, so I can really actually speak to it. I can, you know, I'm telling y'all, I really can speak to this from experience. Because there was a lot of things going on in the 70s and the 80s that should not have been going on in the classroom because of the disconnect and the social society that we had. So the education that we should have been getting while we were sitting in the classroom, we did not get. Bill?
Yeah, and it gets back to, again, I mean, as a nation, and when you talk about Cleveland and New York City, and then you talk about, you know, a small district like Jefferson, Ohio, where I am currently, they're hugely different. And so, one, our solutions have to become community-based. This idea that we can set rules for all schools legislatively from Columbus or Washington fails us in that there has to be, because we have different issues. But the other thing is we are still operating primarily. I mean, Ohio has invested $1 billion in new school buildings, but refused to have the conversation about what a 21st century school would look like. So we replicate brand new 19th century structures with bells and rooms. We haven't questioned, and we have to question what schools are. You know, part of our problem is, too, you know, like within the context of a high school curriculum, where behaviors do get sometimes in the way of productivity, you have to ask the question, you know, why do we, you know, first of all, it comes a matter of tolerance. I mean, do we tolerate behaviors? No, we shouldn't. You know, and sometimes you have to boot someone out, and when they come to the realization that that didn't work for them and they want to come back is when you educate them. I'm not sure that our structure right now makes sense for the 21st century. The other piece is I'm not sure that the information people use to judge their schools has been very good. All of the money we spend on data in our schools and school report cards in Ohio and I'm sure in other states is based on some faulty thinking. For instance, we disaggregate all of our information about students by race and class, special education, and gender, none of which are causes of failure. When you look at the Cleveland schools, you have students who do well, and you have students who do poorly on the measures that we have out there. And I would even question sometimes if those measures are valid. But given that aside, until we start disaggregating scores and evaluating our schools by the causes of failure, a community doesn't know if their school is failing or not. You know, we don't look at, for instance, if you disaggregate a high school's scores on their report card by student GPA, and you find that all your A and B students score better than proficient on a standardized exam, your C students score proficient, and your D and F students fail those, your school has accurately predicted how those students will do. Assessment's not an issue for that school. But what if you disaggregate the scores and you find out your A and B students are failing? Well, that school doesn't know how to assess. We would know what to fix. You from the current schools, you don't fail because you're African-American. You don't fail because you're Hispanic, but we disaggregate scores by those things. You know, you need to disaggregate your causes of failure. If you find out that in your district the students who are failing don't come, put your money in social service, not a new math curriculum. See, we do things wrong, and we do things politically. And the conversation has to become is, you know, what are we going to measure? And do you even know if your school is failing?
Hey, I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600.
Are you still there, Bill?
I would like to know, why is it in Ohio we don't have school choice? What is, and I'm not talking about charter versus non-charter. I'm just talking about parents should be able to go and just send their kids
politics.
Wherever they want.
It's politics.
So it's the politics.
Absolutely. It's politics, which is especially with the teachers union. Teachers unions at a state and national level buy your politicians out.
But if I wanted to send my child to another district that has a union, how is the union hindering that? No, because
the union don't want you to have full choice, because the way your charter law is written, it probably says that only 80% of the teachers need to be certified. Tell you the truth, teachers don't need to be certified anyway. Teachers, the certification
but not
just,
even
is
just
strict.
But charter schools, because we have good school districts that are not chartered. Like the school district that I am in, it's rated excellent. It's a very good school district. It's just not geared towards my child's style of learning. So you have parents, and it's unionized. And they're governed by the same union as the teachers in Columbus. So Columbus parents can't send their children to this school district because our school district is closed to open enrollment, and vice versa. So I'm trying – how is the union stopping that when they're –
Well, I'm talking about full choice. You got the – for instance, when African Americans are polled, they overwhelmingly say they want full choice. But that is countered by teachers unions and also organizations like NAACP. Now, in your particular case, in some states they have laws like they do in Missouri, and this was actually put in place for rural districts that only had K to 8, and they didn't have a high school in their town, so they wanted their children to go to the adjacent town, which was another district, and attend high school. So they put laws in place that said if your child is attending an unaccredited district, then you have a right to send them to the adjoining district where that is accredited. And the district that he is or she is coming from has to pay for it.
Right. Well, our schools are all in Ohio are all accredited the same. So they're basically all the same across the board. So I'm still trying to figure out why a parent in Columbus can't send their child to a school here. Because you know what? When they say school choice,
one reason they're not paying for it too, Diva. I mean, you paying for
you
paying property taxes. You paying property tax in a certain district.
Whether you're renting or owning, you're paying those property taxes. So those
is it the same
dollars,
district?
Well, no, because the tax dollars in Columbus are different than the tax dollars here.
Well, that's
in black.
Where it is right there. Unless you have a state law that permits that, then you won't be able to do that. But I understand what you're saying. But, you know, now, even with that law, you know what happened here? Parents started pulling their children out of the district that was unaccredited, sending them to another district, which left only a few students in the unaccredited district, and now the district is facing bankruptcy. So that's not a very wise law neither.
Hey, Bianchi. This is Alex.
Alex.
What you just pointed out is exactly why full school choice and vouchers do not work. You see, the thing about it is this. Everybody's going to say, I want my kid in the best school, whatever one they think it is, and in that area. Everyone applies, like in Texas, as long as you're in the same district, you're allowed to go to any school that you want to go to. However, they can only accept so many kids. So if you don't...
Well, they should need to start private schools.
Hold on. Here's the thing. What ends up happening is a vast majority of those kids gets rejected because there's only limited space. And they've experimented with it here in Florida where they'll try to accept more kids. Well, only thing that happens is the value of the education in that school goes down because the student teacher rate balloons.
I understand that.
And so
down there in Florida, you got a school called Joseph Little. It's a charter school. Does very good. It's ran by a brother named Mifik. I can't think of his pronounced his way. But you know, here's another point that you're not catching on. The average daily revenue, average daily attendance amount that a child that sits in a public school daily, for the duration,
10 to 12,
$10,000 to $15,000.
Yeah, I know.
But the actual amount of money that it takes for the actual classroom instruction is probably maybe $6,000. So when a child leaves that district and goes to a charter school, only $6,000 follow them, and the rest of it still stays amongst the traditional schools to operate. So, you know, just because they took them out don't mean that it's going to fail. I mean, if you took out the whole $15,000, man, you can get a hell of an education. Matter of fact, you could probably pay for 2 years with one.
Bianchi, the problem is this. you have a lot of students who are not paying taxes. In fact, half of the country does not pay taxes. And so what you're going to the only thing you're going to end up with is the only thing
your
you're going to
tax has no
hold
real
on,
bearing
hold on the only thing you're going the only thing you're going to end up with is let me retract that because what you have you have most people pay their local taxes, but what you have is that you have a certain part of the population that pays and exorbitantly more than others, just because of income disparity, and so what you're going to end up
having
is you're going to get
income tax goes to the payment of school. It's all from property tax.
That's why I said let me retract that. It's not income
okay.
tax. I'm talking about your local taxes and your property taxes. I didn't mean to say income taxes, but that's why what I'm saying is that because of income disparity. Those property taxes and sometimes the local taxes that's the counties that do have local taxes, there's an income disparity of who's actually contributing to those schools. And so when you have these voucher programs, you're going to be left with swaths of schools that go bankrupt because of there's just not going to be any money.
Let me ask you a question. Okay, you're a homeowner, and you decide to rent out property.
Yeah.
Do you have that renter pay the property taxes as well as how much taking a profit off of charging a rent, too?
Hey, we're back.
Well, the person that owned the
building
paid the tax.
What a day. We are not fighting. We're not arguing today. You can hear things in nice, good, concise movement. Isn't it kind of cool that you can do this to Tracy and friends today? That's because Bill is here, and he's such a, he has such a calming. But we're talking about education, and I want to shift the conversation just a little bit because Bill is, his foundation is in art. And both he and Mark are on the Power of the Arts Council, and they're trying to do some great things for the Mahoning Valley as well as the state of Ohio. And since we're talking about education, I am a proponent of not pay to play. I'm a proponent of arts, art class, home ec, design, drafting, all that kind of stuff should be back in the school district. The arts should be back in the school district. Band, music, the symphony, all that should be back inside of the infrastructure of our schools because it lays a foundation for great academic success. People who actually play an instrument, people who are artistic, tend to learn better, tend to learn faster. If I'm wrong, I know Mark will know, and I know that Bill will they will correct me. Am I wrong?
No.
No,
I mean,
that's right.
And not only that, but what you're also hitting on is that in order for schools to be successful, they have to address two things. One, the different learning styles and interests of all of our kids, but also schools have to have humanity. They have to be part of the fabric and the culture of the country, and you can't do that without art.
Bill, what do you mean by
culture?
They have to have humanity? What does
well, they
mean?
Have to have humanity. I mean, if we become a factory in which everything is about kind of a false choice between standards and that which is not quantifiable, then you take away the impetus to learn. I mean, part of, again, when we get back to the politics of education in America and the polarization of Columbus and Washington, is that people have forgotten that we have this common set of schooling. In my opinion, should start pre-K and it should go on through post-high school. But the purpose of that is to create a space within our community for us to reflect upon our community, to look at our history, to understand each other, and to think about where we want to go as a nation. And you can't do that if you don't have the creative arts. You can't do that if you don't give students a foundation in, you know, physical activity. And not the phys ed that's roll out a ball and have kids run around, but a physical education that is really about health and wellness. You know, how do you ground people in where they're going? How do you ground people in being able to use their enfranchisement? How do you ground people so that they understand the importance of the vote? How do you create a school system that mimics for children starting as young as first grade and going through high school, becoming more sophisticated every year, the practice of democracy? And that's what we take out of schools. Yeah. And this conversation around math and science and this conversation about funding and other things, we have allowed ourselves to strip away that which creates a common place for us to come. And it's critical, you know, I often say to people, to, you know, the best ideas of engineers and mathematicians only come to life when an artist designs them. You know, I mean, the reason the iPad still does so well is a process of design.
That's true.
and design is what art is. And you know, you can't... We're diminishing our schools and we're diminishing our public place. And so I look at a legislature that says to me, if we have to sacrifice yet another subject area in terms of our evaluating it, we'll get rid of social studies. Shouldn't social studies be the basis of public education?
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
if you don't know from whence you came, if you don't know where power derives from, how do you confront power? How do you achieve power? So, you know, education is critical. And the arguments that we currently have, in my opinion, are banal.
One of them, when we were doing, we had a Power of the Arts luncheon with some of the Ohio Mucky Mucks up here. And one of the things that I thought of when I was sitting there with these guys, talking about the importance of arts and culture in our lives today. I wrote down some of them, and I'm going to try to remember what they were. If you could understand how a symphony is constructed, you're going to be able to understand how to construct a computer program from start to finish. If you can understand art, learn to draw, you're going to be able to design buildings and design cars. If you can read music, you're going to be able to do math. If you understand history, you're going to know how to prevent wars. These are things that are being swept under the rugs in schools. If you can sing in a choir or march in a band, you'll learn how to work in a group, and that's important in our society. And so these things are at risk here. One of the exciting things, and I'm going to give a shout-out to Youngstown State University and the College of Creative Arts and Communication. One of the things that one of the individuals that I've gotten to know through Bill in Power of the Arts is Dr. Brian DePoy, who is the dean of the Youngstown State University College of Creative Arts and Communication. And one of the things he's doing up there, he's an interesting individual. If you look at what the basis of growth of the Mahoning Valley is right now, which is energy, technology. These are coming together in the fine arts school of all places. We have here, for the listeners who are not from this area, a additive manufacturing research center, which President Obama has mentioned two or three times in his speeches the last couple of weeks. This is basically 3D printing. It's a wonderful technology. It's revolutionizing how we make things. It's revolutionizing how we transport things. And it's important for everything from heart valves to just-in-time inventory for some of our manufacturing entities. And one of the places that this is being centered in the research is in the College of Creative Arts and Communications. because it's a merger of science, it's a merger of technology, it's a merger of manufacturing, and it's a merger of art. And this has got to be the path for the future. And we are taking the very essence that you need to develop things like this. Even when it comes to metallurgy, did Brian ever show you the furnace they have there at the university? That's amazing. For the metallurgy department comes over and to the College of Creative Arts and learns how to mix alloys.
But let me say this: if you burn the dreams of people, it will cause them not to look beyond their today.
Right.
And what we're doing here in America is we're burning our future because we're burning the dreams of that you can come out of where you are. So you and not only just the children, but the parents. The parents don't believe that their children can go beyond their environment and beyond their circumstance. I will never forget, I was talking to a young man, and he was about 7 years old, and I was talking to him about education. It's been years ago, and USC was down the street, and I said, you can go there. He said, no, I can't. And I said, why can't you?
I want to mention SMARTS, which helps address that kind of an issue. SMARTS was a university, was a program that was founded up at Youngstown State University, and right now is in transition out of the university into its own standalone entity. Here's a program that is centered on teaching art, culture, and music to all students at a time when it's being kind of shoved under the rugs in the schools. A very successful program. It's in transition right now, moving from the university control to its own entity. And it's exciting because the support for this program within our community is coming from all over the place because we all know how important it is.
But the infrastructure, the making sure that people know what it is, how to get involved, what to do. Do you realize there are so many people who have never been down to the West Reserve Ballet? They've never been down to Powers. We have taken all of our resources that we possibly can and taken them and shifted them anywhere else but to art.
And we are, and you're talking to somebody with Bill and I who are involved in those sorts of things. We are acutely aware of that problem, and all of our organizations are looking for means to outreach to help take care of the problems. It's not coming from the schools, but that doesn't mean that it's not there. And the exciting thing is that although we see what's happening in our schools, we as a community are moving forward to reach out and to try to go in and partner with the schools to take care of that problem and get them down there to see these things.
But let me ask this. Will the school embrace the arts again?
Not in the way they did before, but I think
Why?
In a new way.
But even in a new way. Will they actually partner with?
I think they will.
Hey, Tracy.
I think they will.
Yep, Bianchi.
Why don't you ask the parents, will they embrace art? And, you know, I would like to see a charter school on baseball.
There's nothing wrong with baseball. Absolutely. You know, here's the thing. This area, you know, we've got to let students move in the areas in which they excel. And if they're excelling in sports, we ought to help them excel in sports. There's all sorts of things you can do relating from everything being professional baseball players to coaches, to little league coaches, to health and physical fitness, to therapy, physical therapy. These are all related coming from that sort of a background.
I've always wanted to partner the professional and the college sports with education because I found out as a young woman that the people that you see on the court are just a manifestation of what goes on behind the back. So the engineering that goes into the floor, engineering that goes into actually making a pair of tennis shoes, the engineering that goes on to the public relations, everything that happens in the back room, even if you are not on the floor. So you may love basketball, but you may never be Magic Johnson.
Yeah
at least 30 different.
What'd you say?
At least 30 different things, Tracy. I had a meeting with some baseball parents. And I drew up a list of the behind-the-scenes things that go on off the court and off the field. And I came
That's
up
amazing,
with about 33 things, including sports medicine, advertising, marketing, landscaping, concessions.
Law.
Audio-visual.
Sports law.
Sports law.
Statistics, the color man, you know, the commentator, all these things are designed around the athletics.
And when I was in school, and I don't know if it is now, so Bill, you'll have to help me out. When I was in school, those jobs were actually done by the students.
Right.
On the high school level.
Right. And if you go, again, if you go to just in our community, you go to Warren Harding High School, they have their own TV station, and they do their news program each and every day. You know, they have their own 3D design team. They have their own marketing team that supports their robotics team. I mean, yeah, it is going on. But what's remarkable today is the tools that we are developing to be able to do this that are then equally remarkable absent from our schools. The fact that I can draw and paint on an iPad today, the fact that, you know, we have the ability to communicate with the greatest minds of our generation simultaneously across, you know, multiple platforms. That has to be introduced into the school. We have to take advantage of what the 21st century gives us. And it's hard to imagine us doing that well in a 19th century structure, which is what our public schools are still constructed as.
Absolutely.
And so now is the time to really, and where this is becoming evident is when you look at education in what we refer to kind of disparagingly as the third world. But if you go and look at countries that did not have an educational structure, that is, they don't have schools, they don't have an infrastructure, they're sitting down today and saying, how are we going to provide education to our kids? They're going to leapfrog America because they don't have an infrastructure to have to combat. They're going to create a 21st century infrastructure. And so, you know, we have to think about, I mean, again, the design, what our legislature should be sitting down and doing educationally is erase their current blackboard and ask themselves, Republican and Democrat, if we were designing a school system and we didn't have one, what would it look like? And start their conversation there and work backwards to how you change what we have to look like that. Because what they're doing right now masquerades as school reform, but it has nothing to do with school reform.
How do you overcome the societal inertia which will keep that from happening?
Well, as an old organizer, I would say you do it by having these conversations in your communities, and you do it because part of what we get the government we deserve and we get the schools we deserve because we have given up the sense that we, the people, can influence those things. And the truth is, if you organize people around the paradigm of what do we really want for our kids and our communities, and they become engaged, then if the people who provide that, you know, that block, that inertia, they won't be there anymore. You'll elect new people. I think, you know, that's what's beautiful about the system is that we still do have a modicum of control. But it is about community engagement, and it is about thinking deeply about these issues. What we have become is not a two-hour talk show where you can have a conversation. We've become a 20, 30-second soundbite. And that's the problem. The conversation in the country is soundbite driven. It doesn't deal with the complexity of the situations we face.
Do you?
Hey, Bill.
Think?
Yeah.
You know, I was involved with schools in Kansas City, Missouri, which is now closed, and you mentioned everything you're saying is absolutely right with community involvement. And back in the 90s, they created them African-centered curriculum schools, and they had one there which has lasted a long time. It's called Chick School. And the activists in the community had done a contract with the school district and said for X number of dollars, we will produce these results. And the money that they asked for was less than the traditional buildings throughout the district. And they did produce the results. Matter of fact, some of the buildings, the student academics ranked in the top six in the state of Missouri. And they didn't have metal detectors in the school as recently as 2011. But, Bill, because of budgetary constraints, they closed all those schools down. So that's why I'm so adamant on parents having full choice to include where they can take their money and take their child where they think is best for them. And I think you might have even mentioned that yourself in one of your
comments. My only concern along those lines is that in that kind of situation, you have the potential of diminishing the impact of those dollars to the extent where you will have nothing to choose from. Because, you know, what you just said, you know, is kind of what is amazing, is like, here's an experiment and it's working, and budgetary cuts cause us to close it. So you just can't say, okay, everybody gets their allotted dollars, now go out and find something. What we have to do is, within the context of that community, demand that our school system not have, if you're a school system of 16, say, elementary buildings, we need to demand that those 16 buildings each have a life of their own, and that they live or die based on their ability to create a structure that the parents will support and that have results. I often talk about, when I talk about education, there is a standards-based economy and there's a rules-based economy, and we haven't learned how to use the two. The legislatures, and especially here in Ohio, have not been willing to give up the rules-based side of the equation. You know, once you decide that schools are going to be based not on the adherence to a set of rules or a checklist of requirements, but you say, here are the standards we want you to meet, then you have to say to schools, meet those standards. You can't say to them, meet those standards, but do it in 180 days, in 6.5 hours a day, with a half-hour lunch, with everybody having the same grades in terms of grade 1, 2, 3, 4, not looking at multi-age, not looking at the use of technology. You've got to give people the ability to be entrepreneurs within that structure. And so we have to somehow get rid of those rules so that you have schools to choose from.
Hey, listen, I got to take my break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WFM.
Leave Bill's mic on.
I have Bill. And Bill Mullane, he's actually in the studio with me, so I can't leave him on with you guys.
Yeah. Why do you come up with all these excuses? Excuse.
Hey, Bianchi.
Yeah.
This is Alex again. I was trying to get in there, but in my opinion, what he's talking about would never happen, particularly because the best performing the evidence has shown that a growing body of evidence is showing that the best performing students are the ones that are actually homeschooled and not in any of these arrangements by our local governments, which means to me that the best solution to education is freedom.
well, you know what the best solution is to education, Alex, uh-huh, is for the community to be well off economically.
Absolutely.
Because we have here in my area two public school districts that have some of the highest performance in the state, Clayton and Ladue. But guess what? 97% or 98% of the revenue to fund those schools come from the local concern, not from the state of Missouri, and not from the federal government. Therefore, those two governments can't tell them jack on how to run their school.
Well,
that's one of the things that cripple.
Here in Ohio, our schools in certain districts, where I am, not about 98% of our revenue comes from the community. We only get maybe 2%, if that, from the state of Ohio. But they still are governed by the state of Ohio.
Well, the state of Ohio only can set the minimum standards. That's the only thing that they can do is set the minimum standards, state board of education. The minimum standards is just, I mean, it's just like jumping over a rope.
Yeah, but they also dictate the curriculum. And so,
No. Your state constitution.
Yeah, in Ohio they do.
In Ohio.
No, wait a minute. Listen, read your state constitution. Your state constitution says that the curriculum is whatever the local concern wants it to be.
But what Bill has said is that, or I don't know if you said it, local concern now has now become the Board of Education. The
Board of Education administrators and the teachers. You're absolutely right. That shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. And so that's
the only way you control the Board of Education is voting them. See, that's why I keep telling these. Yeah, I keep saying I've been watching this for too long. You need to have full choice. Then you could go where you want to go with your child. Then it's your fault. As long as the way it is now, a parent cannot vote out a school board member. Local control does not include the parents.
Well,
you can send your child.
In Youngstown, when I lived in Youngstown, you went to the school depending on what side of town you lived on. And usually the west side, like Cheney High School, was, like the schools on the west side were the better schools, but we couldn't go there because you lived on the north side or south side.
I understand that. I understand that, Diva. Let me tell you what full choice is. Full choice is when, I'm talking about black parents, of course it applies to anybody. Well, when a black parent can send their child to a institution that they feel is best for their children, and the money pays for it. You have excellent...
Pinky, it's easy to say, but it's not practical.
It is practical.
Don't tax dollars factor into that.
Listen, Alex, the Council of Independent Black Institution had over 80 schools across the country, and black parents sent their children to these schools.
Those are... charter schools, private or charter schools.
No, they
were
not charter schools. They weren't charter schools. They were private schools. But
okay, so they're private.
I'm for full choice is schools, is homeschooling. Full choice is charter schools, private schools, and even good public schools. That's what full choice is, with vouchers.
Okay, so you're saying that a parent should have the choice to send their kid, because I can send my child to a private school. It's just very costly.
Absolutely.
In Columbus.
I paid toward the public school district here, and my children never went to them, which I don't mind. I participate in some of the things that go on in public schools as a volunteer and so forth. And I took vans load of superintendent, principal, school board members to visit schools to show them what this school is doing and why come you're not doing the same thing.
Are you saying school choice for you is the parents should be able to have a voucher and send their kid, even if it's a private school, a school for profit or a school that costs, that those tax dollars should pay for that schooling if the parents choose.
Absolutely. I knew a charter school in Detroit called Ensor Roman. The teachers was on welfare and still teaching at the school. Now, you can't do that. I mean, they shouldn't have to do that. They should get paid because the school couldn't afford to pay them enough money.
Pianki, all that is subsidized schools. And the only thing that will happen is the cost of education will rise to whatever that tax dollar is. We see it all the time. That's the reason why, you know, sugar is so expensive in this country, why high fructose corn syrup is in all our food, because the price of sugar due to government subsidy has ballooned the price of that. Only thing that's going to do is just balloon even more the cost of education and make it more unreachable to the average and low-income American.
Well, I don't think it will because, as I said before, I had Marcus Garvey. Look what they're doing, and it was costing back in the 90s about $7,500. But that's still, those children get an excellent education. They don't even have to. They can come out of the grade school at the seventh grade, take their GED, take their college entrance exam, and 13-year-old they're attending college because they have met the academic requirements. Why is that not commonplace?
Because what you're talking about only works when only a small number of people participate. But once it becomes commonplace, like I said, it becomes a government subsidy, and then businesses, which are education institutions these days, the only thing they're going to do is raise their tuition rates, their operating costs, to match whatever they know that they can get out of the government. which is just going to increase the cost of education across
the country. So, Alex, what,
well, what are you doing? What are you doing in public schools now where your actual classroom instruction is $6,000 and the student is bringing over $15,000 to the building?
That's only in a good district does it cost $6,000. In these urban settings, it's more like $10,000 to $15,000.
You know? Yeah, but how much is that student bringing to the district? About 20?
I don't know the number off the top of my head. I mean, you know. But it's probably around there.
Well, fellas, it was good talking. I got a vision appointment, so talk to you guys tomorrow.
No, I understand your concern, Alex, but no, that's the best. All this other stuff ain't gonna haven't worked, man. I've been watching this since 1970s. I went around the country and videotaped classrooms, all black schools that was doing outstanding things. In that school in California, I stayed out there a whole week from preschool up to high school, videotaping the activity that was going on in the classroom.
Yeah, I just think that, I'm familiar with a lot of the examples that you give, but my point is that once you institute that across the board, it will become just another government subsidy. And if you just look at what government subsidies have done, just look at what it's done to college tuition. That's the reason why college tuition it increases about between 7 and 15% every year. When you look at any part of the economy where government subsidies get involved, the costs just skyrocket. And that's what my concern is that once you – I'm familiar with a lot of things that and the successes you're talking about.
Yes, 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And if you want to call locally, you can. The number is 330-781-9600. And Mark Mangi knows it all, and we've got a friend in the studio with his name is Bill Mullane.
What's the name of the song we're playing?
Golden.
Golden, okay.
Jill Scott,
Golden. Okay. I got to get, next week's a big week. I got to go find something for my sweetie next week, Valentine's Day.
I don't even pay attention to that. That's just another day. It does nothing.
I'll get you.
Okay.
You can be my sweetie number two.
Okay, that's cool.
Okay.
That's cool. Hey, listen, Alex, your mic is on.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. I've been listening to you guys, and I have to, your guest was talking about getting the legislatures to, analyze what education should look like. And honestly, I don't think that it's not going to happen. And here's why. It comes down to power. And if you look at a lot of objective studies of across the board of students, the ones that are actually performing exceptionally well and even getting into Ivy League schools like Harvard and Stanford and such are the ones that are homeschooled. And so what this tells us is that we need more freedom, actually less government, and let education be more controlled by the parents and not by administrators, so that because parents will do what is best for their children. And we can't have this reliance on government to, you know, do what's best for us. We need to do it ourselves. And so I think that an objective look at this will show that actually we don't need these guys that are making making these regulations and such for and these educational standards and curriculums. We don't need these guys, and so they'll never admit to that, which is, in my opinion, why we'll never get with it. You get that through our current legislature.
See, and I would say to you that the commitment to a public education is fundamental to a democracy. If you let this become, first of all, you're positing an environment in which everybody just educates themselves. And again, the right to homeschool should be unabridged. And parents who decide to do that and who have the capability and the resources to do that, no one should object to that. But that's not the circumstance of the majority of our children. That's not the circumstance of rural communities throughout America. It's not the circumstance of a lot of people within our urban structures and even our suburban structures. The commitment to a free and public education is fundamental to a democracy, and to subrogate that, in my mind, would be a tragedy.
Well, don't you think that it's kind of disingenuous to call public education free? I mean, there's actually, you know, in the bad school districts, there's between $10,000 and $15,000 that goes to, you know, those districts or that school per child, and you know, or that's what it costs per child, we should say. So, why not just let people keep their money, and then they can choose what they want to do in terms of education for their child instead of it being mandated in a top-down fashion?
Well, again, I think, you know, what are they going to choose between? You know, give them the money, and it gets dissipated in a way that there's nothing left to choose from, which is even in a more structured way is happening here in Ohio. I would say, you know, the choice to educate outside of the public realm comes with a responsibility on behalf. I mean, my parents chose from first grade through eighth grade to send me to a parochial school, and they paid to do that, and they made sacrifices to do that. That was all right, but they also supported their public schools, and eventually my mother became a school board member in a public school. You can't diminish, and when we say free in public school, what we're talking about is not that it's never going to be free from the standpoint, yes, we collectively pay a lot of money to have the schools. It's free to the children, and we cannot say that there is no structure that I can imagine in which you just say to everybody, we're going to redistribute our tax dollars, give everybody a certain amount of them who have children, and now you go out in the marketplace and spend your money.
I have a question, and it goes with the lines of this. How in the world can we know that a child cannot read by the third grade?
Right.
And not do anything about it.
You can't.
No, eighth grade.
Oh, no, but you know, it's a third grade reading guarantee. And you know that this child, you start them out in Head Start. So that's preschool. They go through kindergarten, and the first, second, and third grade, and in the third grade, you know this child cannot read. And if a child cannot read, the child cannot learn. Because by the third grade, you learn to read, and by the fourth grade, you read to learn. Yet, we continue to advance and to spend more money on I don't know what, and this child by the eighth grade still cannot read. I don't understand it. I need someone to help me, to help explain this to me.
Yeah, and I think when you and again, it depends so much on where you're located. You know, I happen to work in schools that, when it comes to Ohio's third grade reading guarantee, with the exception of a very few students who have really well-identified learning disabilities, cognitive disabilities, very few students are going to enter third grade or exit third grade not having met the standard that Ohio sets. That's less true in different locations. But again, I would say it has so much to do with the faulty structure of a school system that in the 19th century was designed to sort people, and a 21st century structure which needs to recognize the needs of students and work with them individually. You can't just simply have a structure of first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade and suppose that everybody's going to move at the same time. And you can't decide that you're going to break your day into periods of time. Now it's time to go to this class or that class. There comes a point, and it comes very early in the first or second grade, where if you have a student who can't read, doesn't it make sense to create a structure in which those students are brought together and taught to read?
Are they allowed to do that, though? I mean,
well,
that's the concern.
They should be able to. They can. The structure right now is such that, and especially the bigger your structure, the more the structure gets in the way of that. But, no, I think that is exactly what we have to look at, is we can't continue to assume that we have a structure to support what we were trying to do.
I'm not an educator, and I got to pull Pam in for just a second. I'm not an educator. I've been on the school board. I'm very passionate about education, but I don't understand why we haven't changed this. Because when I was on the school board, I was saying the same exact thing because I was not a good student. I knew what I knew, and I knew what I didn't know. Yeah.
They don't change it because they need the children to make the system work. You got pensions at stake. You got salary and wages. And you know, in all respect, Bill, I've been following this as it applies to black and African-American children since the days of the Our Basic Skills. Our Basic Skills, then came Goals 2000, then came No Child Left Behind. Now you got Common Core, and it's going to be something else next month. It's not working for my particular ethnic group. I don't care what other people say, but it's not, and history shows this. So why come you don't listen to what the people are saying? They say overwhelmingly, we want to choose what our children do in these public schools or any school setting. But you just won't listen.
But the question is, I shouldn't have to listen if I'm a part of America, because America is supposed to be driven by the people and not by the politicians. That's just how I was always taught.
Right. And again, I mean, I come from a different environment. When I took over an urban high school, I opened it up to community evaluation of the school. We brought in parents, business people, educators to attend school, to interview students, to interview parents, to interview teachers, to attend classes, to spend their days in the school, to write a very public report and to make the suggestions and then to hold us accountable to implement the suggestions they made. You know, again,
you know what they've done here?
I'm not sure that, and again, we had this conversation off air for a little bit. Part of the problem with all of these brandings of education, No Child Left Behind, and Race to the Top, and all of these things, is that we have failed as a society to also define the role of the learner in learning. I would say to you, if you show me a school where a student comes every single day and is doing their work, and they can't read, or they are not being given an education, you need to close that school. If you show me a student who's failing, and when I disaggregate their scores and I find out that they've only been there one-third of the time, or that they have been suspended 15 times, then we've got another issue. And it's not that I would ever subrogate and say we can't deal with that issue, But we've got to deal with it separately from the notion that students who come and work hard are not learning. And
Bill, you mentioned
you mentioned
earlier about reporting.
Right.
You know, I had to laugh at that. Here in the city of St. Louis Public School District, about back in 2004, maybe a little earlier, they came up with a new way of reporting. Now, if your fourth grade, only 25% of them is reading at where they should be, that means 75% are failing. Now,
right.
They went to a way of reporting in, which went like this, expected and better than expected. So if the next time they go about testing the children and 25% are reading where they should be, then that's considered expected. If the next year they go to test the children and you got 28% of them reading where they should be, then it's graded as better than expected.
Oh, Pam,
and
your mic is on.
The public.
Yeah, I would agree that that seems to be a faulty way of doing disaggregation of scores.
Pam, your mic's on.
Yeah. The person that was talking about if the kids can't read, the schools should be closed. Well, that's what the Campaign for African American Achievement has been saying for the last 7 or 8 years. And people keep saying that the public schools, you're trying to destroy the public schools. No, here in Youngstown, 67% of the kids that go to the schools are black kids. And they are, and for the last 15 years, those black kids' scores has been an F. And the state come in with a commissioner to take over the school system, and every time they use the money to bring in consultants, they don't look like our kids, they don't understand what we're trying to tell them, so therefore we haven't moved. We were one time under a different superintendent, we had got to continuous improvement, and some of the schools were effective, but then they pushed her out, and now they got a superintendent in, and we're back down to an F. And if you don't know, Tracy, it costs $17,000+ to educate kids here in Youngstown City Schools, and you can go to a Youngstown State University at $8,000 a year. So it's something wrong when you can take twice as much money to educate a kid in Youngstown City Schools, and they still are at an F, the grades are still F. And when you talk about sports, to me, I think it's a disgrace when you let Youngstown City School kids play sports and all they have to have is a grade point average of 1.9.
Well, you know, I voted against that back in 2003.
And we're still doing the same thing. So, you know, the president has an initiative, 13621, where he put an executive order in that black kids are below average all over the country, and he gives you a choice. He gives you either a choice of taking your kids, putting them in a private school, a charter school, or open enrollment or wherever, but he lets the money go, and President Barack Obama has put in over $50 million in the school systems in the state of Ohio, and we still have black kids, and they're rated an F. So what you say is the speaker said that if you got kids and they can't read, you should close the schools. Well, you know, Tracy, we got kids in the 7th and 8th grade and can't read at a 3rd grade level.
I have not been involved with the African American achievement for a number of years now, but I will say this. And we were talking about this during the break, about putting together a summit of talking about education in the Mahoning Valley. It has to change. We keep on doing the same thing over and over and thinking that we're going to get different results. And we need to know by now, it is not the same thing. Our problem is not that our children cannot learn. We have not given them the incentive to learn.
And Tracy, one of the things that I spoke to the Board of Education on at the last meeting in last month was history. Our kids, I heard him talking earlier about the ethnicity and the culture. Until our kids know that they were not, their culture do not start at slavery. That we didn't come here as slaves. We came here as Africans out of a continent with our own culture, our own ethnicity, our own religion, whatever have you. But when we came here, they took it away from us. And anyone knows in order for you to exploit a person is if you take away their culture and they don't know who they are. So my problem was we have a Black History book in the Youngstown City Schools that dates all the way back through.
If you cannot, listen, the problem is if you cannot read the book, it will do you no good. As an African American who lives in the city of Youngstown, who's passionate about students and learning, as though I want it to be the responsibility of everybody else to teach my children what they need to know. When you've got 149 churches and all of these AKA FBIs, Alpha Phi Alpha, KA Psi, Omega Psi, all these fraternities, sororities, all the links, the Black children, the credit union, we got all these organizations. We got all this stuff going on, yet we don't have programs that are systemic, and we're working together to make sure that our children know where they came from.
Hold on, Diva.
It is my responsibility as who I am to organize my community to make sure that my children know who they are. And I'm not going to ask for somebody else to make sure they learn it, because I just want them to learn 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, and I'm going to teach them who they are.
But Tracy, they still have American history in the school, and they're teaching European history there. To me, I went to school, and they taught me French. I've never used it since I got out of school. So drop the French and put African-American history and American history.
Listen to what I'm saying. Talked about this before.
You said the other day.
Right now on the school board. You've got a majority of African Americans, and if they want to change the curriculum, that's where we start. The question is, when are we going to push them to make sure that American history and African American history are the same? We can't
because
say that to somebody else.
The book, the state prints the book, and the state
no,
is
they don't print the book.
To keep us in the place where
no,
they
have
us.
No, they don't.
They don't really want us to know. That's why they get them.
It's not about what they don't want you to know. They don't care if you know it or not.
But I have
that's
to say,
the
our
issue.
Our children do have the capability of learning. Before I moved from Youngstown to Columbus, I was tutoring a young man who was failing. He was in eighth grade going to ninth grade. I was tutoring him this summer because they said if he did not get his work in and pass, he would go fail. So I tutored him that summer. I tutored him 3 days a week in three subjects, English, math, and reading, which I guess now is language arts. And he passed. In my tutor room, he passed. He passed those classes. Now, when I left, he starts doing poorly again. So what is it that I was doing differently on a 101 that he couldn't get while he was in school?
I'll tell you what it was. You treated him as an equal, as an individual. You let him be himself.
No,
you weren't teaching him as a Black kid. And you're teaching him to be a white kid in a Black face.
Well, he was mixed.
He was
mixed, raised white with a white mother, so I don't think that had anything to do with it. The fact is I understood that he did have a learning disability, and I taught him how I knew he could learn. I had to use different things on how to get him to teach him certain things. So why is it that our teachers can't do that?
Alex, you want to jump in on here? I hear you.
I'd
like to.
Yeah, you know, I just want to say that
everything that's said to me is evidence why you can never create a one size. You can never create any structure that's going to be a one size fits all for everyone. You're never going to get. See, here's what it comes down to. It doesn't come down to income level or anything, because I see phenomenal children here in Orlando who are in poverty. The difference is the involvement of the parents, that they want their children to succeed. That's not something you can legislate. And so this is why I say don't waste money on all these programs that will not work, because they won't work if the parents are not involved and want their children to succeed.
May I jump in?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. We have examples across this nation. We have the military schools, number one, and I'm talking about schools on military bases that work. We have the private academies that work. Why do you think, and you're still working with those schools where parents are not going to be there with that child and have them achieve? What happened to the back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, where our people, some of them did not have families, like my father only had his father who worked 24 hours a day, and he learned quite well, became a professional, a lawyer. His grades were very good. What's the difference? You know it's discipline, but you know that you cannot put discipline in the city schools because it's against the law for that anymore. But on the military basis and on these private academies, they're figuring out a way to get discipline done. Tell me that you have tried to find best practices across this nation and put them and implement them in different curriculum of the Ohio schools. You haven't done it. You're not trying to do it, and you're allowing the union to tell you whatever the hell they want to tell you. And that's the problem. If they don't do something about that now, and this is a matter for unrest, to tell you the truth, because they are damning your children for good, because they cannot do anything but be a ward of the state for the rest of their lives most of the time. That's what they are becoming, and you won't do the right things. Programs don't work unless you do the right programs and install discipline. You must have it. Nobody learns without it. We say, why do the Chinese are better or this, that? Because their societies, because there's just so many people that disciplined. They have to. They can't afford to go to the left or to the right. We have so much freedom here that we've allowed freedom to shackle the minds of our kids. You have to stop this foolishness.
I agree with you. And in our city schools here, we have a uniform code, and nobody even enforces that.
They don't want to enforce anything because they know good and well. And I hate to say it like this. It's a vicious system where you have one set of people that want to live off of poor people. They want the poor people to stay poor. Why? Because it keeps them with a low cost labor, and it keeps them with a voting block of people.
You're
so
absolutely
now you figure
right,
that
Jeff.
Out who that is, and you tell me. Tell
You're
me.
You're absolutely right, Jeff.
I agree.
See, this is what makes me angry, because my daughter is doing well. Okay, she had my wife and I to raise her. But the thing is I can't reproduce that for everybody. Somebody's home has an addicted parent. It has a parent that just never learned himself, and then is teaching their own children how to go out and steal and do other things. You have to make school be something different than what you're saying it is. And that's what's if you don't change that now, you are done. This nation is done. You as a person, however long you live, are done. You shouldn't be getting any money. But this is going to cause some kind of unrest sooner or later, because it's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. We have examples. If you didn't have the example, then it wouldn't be, oh, woe is me, I don't know what to do because we can't implement this. No, you don't need to implement that. You need to find what works.
And, you know, if I could say something, Jeff, I agree with you 100%. And you're absolutely right. There are examples of where black children are doing very, very well, even sometimes outperforming their counterparts in white suburbs. But these school districts always want to try something new that haven't even been tested or proven, and I don't understand that. It's just like Jeff said, they want these kids to fail because they are a commodity that's needed, as I mentioned before. In order for teachers to derive their pensions and salary, they got to have somebody sitting in them desks. And then they move on to yet another system.
One last thing I'm going to say, and we say this all the time, and you probably said it earlier, that we built prisons off the third and fourth grade test score of African-American children in the city. Then you know that this is a plan. We have to stop it.
Agreed.
Are we off the air?
They probably don't cut the signal and electric and everything else when you start telling the truth.
Yeah, well, I agree with him. I agree with him. And there are black schools around this country, in Chicago, in New Jersey, and in Los Angeles, that has black-centric schools where kids are coming out at 100% and going to college at 100%. But nobody wants to bring people from there in.
Well, here's the thing. What I have to repeat it again. All those examples are those children want to learn. Those children want to learn, and usually it's because their parents, it's reinforced in the home. And so you can't, the system does not work. You cannot create a system that compels unruly children.
Sure you can.
No, it doesn't.
Alex, I have never seen a child that didn't want to learn. I have never seen a child that did not want to learn.
Have you ever worked in them? I did.
I grew up with a lot of children.
I'm telling you, you can instill that, because if you get the respect of that child by talking to him, by cornering him and getting it up, you may not get 100% of them, but you'll get most of them. And the thing is if they know you care about them, they will be want to learn, because they just want somebody to do that.
When you put a kid in a school where they don't tell them that your history began in slavery, if you let that kid know that you didn't come here a slave, slaves were made, like I tell the kids, we're the only people that should have stamped on our behinds made in America.
I never see.
We got this mentality that we are nobody. If you give that kid a sense of where they come from and the civilization that Africa was the first great civilization. The first university was there. Africa is not a dark continent, but that's what they teach the kids. So the kids come here thinking that we never did anything, and now they're trying to tell you in school that we're the only civilization that never gave anything to civilization.
Okay,
does that make sense? If it hadn't been for us, America would still be living in sod huts.
Let me say this real quick to what the two brothers just said. Now, it's right about children wanting to learn, because as an example, I've heard mothers out their mouth feel guilty and have pity parties about the fact they dropped out of school and that they didn't, you know, that they didn't finish school and all this kind of stuff, and their little six-year-old child be like, "Oh, I don't want to go to school. It's boring." And they don't enforce education on that child. You understand what I'm saying? So it's also about the parent, because you do have children out here such as mine that love to learn, that love the whiteboard, that loves to read. But again, that falls again on the parent. So the brother
about that. That's not the parent. That is black society's fault. That's whose fault it is.
Why do you say black?
How can it be because any other society wouldn't let that go on. We let that go on in our community.
Absolutely.
That's black society's fault.
And our churches,
Let me speak.
No, wait, let me speak, because I didn't get you. So, okay, brother, I hear you.
But it's a mentality that comes with that. Because look at the circumstances. This mother dropped out of school. She had a baby at 15. Now, imagine how many more other mothers have done that. But that's still, mentality. That doesn't give an excuse for that mother to
when
say,
was she taught to be?
Okay.
When was she taught to be a parent? When was she taught in her previous 12 years after she graduated June the 15th to be a parent or uphold her civic responsibility?
That's
it was never
about.
Taught.
It's right. It's
That's black society's
thing.
Fault.
Right, right. But it's, you, but at the same time, it's a mental thing. I don't feel like I had the
Well, I agree
childhood.
With you. Black society
right.
do have a mental thing.
Yeah. I don't believe this is a
Hey, I'm back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I want to thank Mark for coming and hanging out with me and bringing Bill with him. Bill's been a friend of mine for a very, very long time, and I thank him for his time to come and spend some time with us, and hopefully he'll come back and hang out with us again.
This has been really educational and enlightening. I've enjoyed this.
Very, very informative. And it's important to have a conversation, and I have some conversation that's going on in the chat room. We're talking about the problems. But unless you address the problems, you don't address the solutions. The solutions are in the midst of the problems, and that's where innovation comes. We can't change it here on Talk Radio. I wish we could. I wish we could talk about this and make the program, and then they listen to me because they're listening to me and on the radio, and then when they say, oh, that's and we're going to do it. But that's not how it works. It works through legislative power. It works for your voting and getting the right people in the right places to make the right decisions so that you can get the right things done. Because remember, you're dealing with a public school. You're dealing with policy. You're dealing with politics. And those of you who say that you hate politics, you hate how things are done, and you don't want to get involved, but you want to sit up and bark about what's going on in the education system, in the political system, you can't do both. You really got to jump in and say, you know what, I got to get my feet wet. I've got to pay attention to my school board. I've got to pay attention to my city hall. I've got to pay attention to my legislator. Yesterday was the last day of filing for your state reps. How many of you actually paid attention to the people that were running and that thought maybe you could run for it also? You don't have to be the most intelligent, highly educated person in the world. You just have to be a person who will stand up, have integrity, and do the right thing. That's how people actually, you know, get involved in politics. And then when you get there, don't corrupt yourself.
Yeah, that's right. You got to participate. It's the old story. If you don't win, you can't win unless you buy a ticket. And how you buy the tickets to get in there and participate?
You
got
to do that.
And get
and
active
important.
And do stuff.
It's so important. And I think we miss the boat completely because we think that we're not smart enough, we're not bright enough. You know, there's a state school board. If you don't like the books, there's ways for you to get involved in every state in the union. If you choose to do so.
But you know, Stacy, I mean, what you said is easy to say, but it just don't work. I mean,
yeah,
like you said earlier.
I do it every day.
Like you
no,
said, well, that's you. I mean, honest, no. Tell the truth. Be honest. It would be dishonest for me to use my income to compare why come somebody else is not doing the same thing. It's dishonest.
Here's what I'm saying. Let me say it. I'm being very, very honest. Getting involved
you know
in
what
politics,
you said that was true?
Getting involved.
When you said that today's parents was never taught to be a parent. It was yesterday's parent. You're absolutely right.
But,
you can't
but,
expect
but,
somebody to do something they never have been taught to do.
But what I'm saying to you is there are those of us who know better who don't get involved. I'm not talking about the ones that don't do. See, when you those of us that know better ought to do for those who don't know better and then bring them up. As I said, when we first came in the door today, one of the other DJs here, we were talking about paying it forward and random acts of kindness. Well, if you can't get to the door, I need to be patient enough to wait for you to get to the door, to open the door for you. Not because you can't open the door, but because I'm trying to do something right. And then at the meantime, you're going to pick something up that I dropped as I walked in the door. And that's the same with goes with politics. Yes, it's easier said than done because hard work is hard work. And everything that you do that's going to change anything that's substantial is going to take hard work. And you're going to have to risk some things. You're going to have to sacrifice some things. But in the end of the day, hard work and ingenuity and perseverance usually pays off. I've never seen it not pay off.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you, Tracy, I've been watching this for too long. for too long. And I've heard these same old songs over and over again. It won't work. Anytime we just got to talk.
It won't work.
Anytime. Well, listen. In the present system we're in now. Now say the present system that it has captured the most so many children. Anytime that you have a school that is performing, a building that's performing where the children is ranking in the top six in a whole state and they still close the school, come on now.
Right.
But Jeff.
Yeah.
Is that you? Tell me.
That's absolutely true.
But my question is, tell me if we did not get involved. And if we got involved politically.
You have to get involved. But the thing is it's going to take people that aren't those bad parents to get involved to try to change it. Because I hear Alex and stuff and things like that. But I know better on absolute. I have several. I had the dead-end kids when I worked in the school system. I understand. They didn't have any kind of households. They came out of poor households. One of them is out here making more money than me now. And he said, Mr. Green, I thank you because, you kept on expressing that I had to learn how to read and I had to learn math and this stuff like that. And I finally did. He owns like about 40, 50 houses, and he does home improvements as well. So, I mean, this young man is doing fine. He just recently ran for office. I think he was ill-advised. But still, the point is he caught on. And several others did, too. Some of them didn't. But you have to change how you do it. It's not going to work with this, like you somebody said earlier, the cookie-cutter one-size-fits-all. But some parents are not going to change. You can't do that. So what do? Just kill those kids?
Hey, Jeff. Jeff.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Alex. You know, it's great that you made a difference. And a lot of people can, and that's great. And I'm not discouraging that at all. But what I think is that there's no way that you can implement through government a system that's going to work for all children. That's my only point.
You can put discipline back in the school somehow and get it done. That's the only way to do it.
An
undisciplined mind, the Bible says, is like a city without walls. There's no defense. They can't do it.
I don't believe that it's a teacher's job to discipline children.
I did not say it was.
The children that come should be ready and willing to learn.
So what do you do with the ones that aren't?
Part of the problem in this country is that we think that everybody has to progress at a certain time the same way. I mean, you can – just because a kid doesn't, learn to read when other people do – I know people who I was smarter than in school through elementary, but now as we're adults, they're doing much better than me. And so we cannot use these things to judge people's potential. And so that's the only thing. Give people the freedom to learn at their own pace because – just because somebody is two, three grade levels ahead in elementary does not mean that they're going to go on to cure cancer.
But that's not what we're saying.
But my point is that I'm not saying you throw these kids away, but don't waste resources implementing programs that will not work because those children are not ready and willing to learn.
But like I said earlier, I think I was telling Bill here in the studio, I am a proponent of mastery. Mastery learning, to me, is the best way of achieving academic success because every child learns differently, different areas of academia. They just do. I don't think all children should be, social, what they call a social promotion. If you're 10 years old and you're still in the first grade, then you need to stay there until you get there. I understand that. But
brother,
what I also
I
said.
I know a brother who stayed in the ninth grade for his whole 4 years, and they just finally passed him. He tried so hard, but he couldn't make it past the ninth grade, but they still graduated him.
But the question is, was it him or was it the way they were teaching him? And I think Bill brought that up earlier. He said that there was a young man that was, but Bill, what was the story about? Who was it, the young man?
The young woman whose mom took her to, and eventually found dance.
Dance was a key to her motivation.
But again, I would say to people,
you know, yes, you are not going to find a system that works for every single person. Yes, there are always going to be obstacles, but a solid public education structure is fundamental to democracy, fundamental to the republic, and it needs to be there. We have to find ways to create choice. We have to find ways that choice take place in the public sphere, and we have to find ways to use 21st century technology to reach even more children. But you can't give up. And I would say to people who say you can't make change, that's just fundamentally not true, and that you have to have faith to go out and organize your community, organize people of a like mind, and bring your perspective to the table. And understand in this messy process of democracy, we come with divergent perspectives, but we have to find some commonality, and we have to move forward.
Hey, Tracy.
Hold on, Pianki. Go ahead, Alex.
I just want to say I have to vehemently opposed to the comment that public education is pretty much fundamental to democracy. I think it's asinine. I mean, if you look, there is no education written into our Constitution because it has no purpose in government. And when you look at when we have the most prolific thinkers in this country is when we had no public education. And the further the government encroached into education is the dumber we got. When we got the most gains in our sciences and technology, the fundamentals of electricity, like from people like Nikola Tesla and Edison, this is when we didn't have all this encroachment into our public schools. But as the further they get into the schools, you can see historically, I'm not making this up, you see that the performance of our country has degraded so with that encroachment of the government.
I would disagree with that. First of all, in the Declaration of Independence, which is one of the fundamental documents, it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Happiness, philosophically, and from John Locke on, was defined as education. So it is fundamental, and it is there.
But
the federal government's role in public schools may not be even where we want to begin. But to say that somehow education is antithetical to growth is just nuts. And to say in the 21st century now, where education and what we are facing in the technological revolution and the changes in our society, it is just fundamentally critical that everyone have access to that, that everyone have access.
Could I say something, Sage?
Sure.
Go ahead, Bill. Go ahead, Pianki.
Bill,
make it quick.
Bill, as Alex said, the U.S. Constitution does not mention anything about education. The Declaration of Independence was a declaration where the Pilgrims broke away from the King of England. Another point, are you saying that my people need to come up with a Declaration of Independence so they can get away from the ravages of public schools? The Constitution permits you to associate or disassociate with whomever. So when can we use the full privileges of the United States Constitution, which is the strongest law in this land, where we can disassociate ourselves from this ravages of these public school systems?
Well, I would say you can. I think people have that right.
You know, they added on that.
Yeah,
let him finish.
I think there's no question that our experiences with public schools are so diverse and so different. And, of course, my perspective, both as someone who was a product of parochial and public schools and someone who has worked in the public schools, is that we aren't ravaged. And, again, I can't speak to some districts, some places where I've not got experience. I mean, your experience may be one of you need to start from scratch. But we have some pretty functional, remarkably cogent schools doing great work in Northeast Ohio.
I'm sure you do, but what makeup are they as far as racial?
In Warren G. Harding. It was African American and white, 50%, 50%. In Ashtabula City, it's African American, Hispanic, and white. In Jefferson, it's primarily Caucasian. So it's different in certainly different communities, but they're
performing well.
Right. Oh yeah.
Why?
I think because they have a system that allows the students to, for instance, at Warren G. Harding High School, when students would graduate, I mean, I would sit with a young man who was valedictorian, an African-American young man, and I had the privilege of watching him say to Harvard, I'm going to turn down your free ride and go to Howard for free. I mean, he was able to use his public school education, but what he would tell you and what he would tell his peers is, I'm not standing here as valedictorian with these choices because of anything other than my hard work. I did this. And again, we have to get back to the point where we look at what is the responsibility of the learner, what is the responsibility of the system to the learner, and holding those things accountable. And it's critical that those opportunities be available to everyone.
Well, you know, if I could, and I just want to say this, and I'm going to leave it at that.
I'm going to leave too, because I only got a minute and a half. Don't worry about it.
But, you know, there was a public school in Detroit called Paul Robeson. All black schools use a African-centered curriculum, and the community was well entrenched in it. In September, when they had 100 open seats, they had over 10,000 applications for those 100 seats to get into a public school, Bill. That is an example of fine choice working. Parents need to have choice.
I want to thank everyone for hanging out.
Well, we got cut off. Hey, Bianchi. Alex, you there too?
We're agreeing today, Bianchi.
They're all. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
The only thing I take issue with Bianchi and Alex about, it may not be in the Constitution, but going back several thousand years ago into the ancient Greek democracies, all the way through with all the great societies that believed in democracy and believed in personal freedom, they all had one tenet, and including here in this country, and that you can only have a free people when you have an informed, educated, literate population. And they've used those words over and over, educated, literate, informed. They found different words, because where would they get the knowledge to stay free? And the reason it's not in the federal Constitution, Bianchi, because I know you're a scholar on that, it's, you know where it says it, and you've probably quoted better than me. I'm just going to have to paraphrase it. What they don't specifically give to the federal government, they gave to the states. So if the states want to set up an educational system, they have the right to do that.
I hear you, and my thing, is everybody gone?
No, I'm still here.
It's just the one thing. You have to have a place of being able to control your environment. They have to come into a controlled environment, and when they come in, they have to know that, no, you're not going to get away with stuff inside of here like you do when you're away from here.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be some ultimate, hit the road. And if you hit the road, you're going to be left out there a certain way. And the camaraderie that you build with a discipline, that's why the schools, how do you have a school in Chicago that has 100%, it's all black males, 100% graduation rate, 100% go to college and graduate rate? How do you do that? Those people don't all have parents that are just care and just and know what to do to teach those kids how to come up. They're not all there.
Exactly. That's why we need public school. That's why we need some type of organized school system, because those parents wouldn't know what to teach their kids. In three generations, we'd have a whole bunch of nothing but even dumber people running around.
Yeah, you're right about that.
If it wasn't the purview of the local government at least stepping in to trying to educate the populace. One thing, though, is we have totally taken the incentive out of parenting to be a good parent. Jeff, I'm telling you, if you put a law in there into the books that you receive no public benefits under any circumstances if your kids are not attending school and advancing at a reasonable rate, you'd find a lot of parents who were disassociated to their job of parenting all of a sudden get real proactive. Somebody on public assistance of any type, I don't care what it is. I'm not talking about just welfare. Any type, unemployment, anything. They should be, by law, you have to show up at the PTA meetings. Otherwise, you're not our problem anymore. You go off and do your own thing. If you want the right to be totally free, well, then don't take our money either.
You're putting in a discipline.
Wait a minute, because welfare is workfare. So even people who's getting social services, especially if you're getting the money, you have to work for that money. You have to go to job programs. So
yeah,
you're not going to be able to even attend those events.
They really don't have to. I hate to say.
Why would you punish the kids and not? You're saying they have to go their own way. What are you going to do with the kids?
Well, all I know is I was raised by a single mom who had three jobs. She learned English to become a citizen, and she held down those three jobs. One was in a factory because it had a little bit of benefits attached at 5 cents an hour above minimum wage, and the other two jobs were waitressing jobs that were evenings and weekends. And she found time. She found babysitters. She found an extended support system. Didn't have a relative in this country or anything. And we worked it all out somehow. This system has totally taken away the individual's incentive to do a damn thing for themselves. Nothing do they do for themselves. Without a program, I'm a victim. And that is so wrong in this society.
Well,
you know they got that.
I know single women right now who have worked their way through college and everything.
The kids that go to early college are the same kids who came out of dysfunctional homes, and they took them out and put them in a different setting on Youngstown State University, and that is the one school in Youngstown that every time they get a grade, their grades are excellent. But they,
you know, I don't know what goes on.
Home, they took them out of the public school, put them on the Youngstown State College campus. And those kids go. They went there and they saw other kids learning. They took pride in themselves because they felt like, I am somebody. And when Jeff asked the man about the schools and he was talking about Astabula, I bet you the teachers that are teaching in those schools where those kids are learning, and it couldn't be that many black kids up in Astabula County, but if they're learning, it's because the teachers have their own kids in the school that they teach.
Well, that could be too, but up there, there is quite a few blacks up in Astabula County.
Well,
I don't know what made that happen.
No, it sounds like somebody underwater.
But it did, because when I used to work there as well,
I don't know what city they live in, because, you know, when I worked for the state, we used to go to Astabula to haul back salt and grit and gravel and whatever from up there on the lakefront. And when we used to go up there to get the salt, where I was going into, I saw very few black people. But then I went up Route 11, and that's where I was going.
I'm just saying
that if the teachers in the school, if their kids go to that school, they have an invested interest in teaching the kids. So if your kids happen to be going to school where the teachers teach, then they're teaching your kids because they have to teach theirs. But here in Youngstown, 80 to 90% of the teachers that teach in the inner city where our kids are failing live out in the suburbs, and their kids are going to excellent school systems. So they can't
teach for America.
Take your kids out of the inner city then. Then you should be totally in support of the voucher system.
I'm supportive of choice. Whatever it takes to get your kids educated, and that's what we tell the parents.
And that's why I don't understand why the black community in Washington, D.C. is still so jacked up on President O. because he killed the voucher system in D.C.
Yeah, he sure did. You're absolutely right.
Why does any respected black person with children think this man is okay for their kids for education? Why would
you know
think
another
man
thing
is in their corner?
Here in St. Louis at the University of Missouri, I heard that you had some children that were scoring 3.8 in the university, and they were sleeping in their cars, or they would get on the Metrolink and ride over to the airport and sleep in the airport.
Oh, man, let me tell you about the school system. Those Pell Grants and all that stuff, they give you hell. It doesn't even matter if you have your own place to stay. They still ask you for your parents' signature, and I'm telling you, I think they do that crap on purpose. And even with the whole school system, period, especially with college, it's, man, that's a ripoff, too. You have to be careful with that also, even if you're just going to a CUNY college. And, yeah, when you're a college student, you are very broke. But there's also a program with social service that you can be a part of while you are going to college. But the trick with it is you have to be in a curriculum that they approve of.
Is that Miss New York?
I don't know if that is called TAG. That's the program I was a part of. But the trick is you have to be a part of a program that they would approve of. And you have to be careful with that because they probably put you in just a basic program that won't really do too much for you as far as the degree, you know, depending on who you are. But, yeah, you have to work 20 hours a week or do an internship for 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
And
well,
they help
Obama,
you with your car fare.
He did
yeah.
something else. President Obama, by executive order, took the state's ability to order work fare as a condition of receiving public assistance. He took that away 2 years ago with an executive order.
Mm.
He undid that piece of legislation. So
yeah, that's what I was saying. They don't have to work
states,
anymore.
They're not linked anymore.
Yeah, that you know.
What executive order was that?
I can't remember what it was, but he.
Well, I would like to know.
Well, I tell you what now.
We'll get
he
it,
did.
But he did, and there's no doubt about it.
He did kill the D.C. voucher program.
He relaxed all of the because we were on the radio about that then. I had a livid fit about it because I knew what he was doing, but like I said, I knew who he was before he got there. These guys, they have a thing where they are going to make sure that more and more people get slapped up on the system, because if they get up on the system, they can control you. And they don't want you being independent. That's why they don't give a damn about your education. That's not a priority.
I'll tell you something
one.
Else he done.
He was asked about it the other day. He said, O'Reilly said, with the education system of you know, blacks not getting educated well, and the out of birth wedlock, why aren't you and Michelle with PSAs and stuff saying something in the black community? And he had nothing to say, and then he tried to finally pull something out of his behind by saying that we support these things with like a check or something. You're saying you're the president of the United States. Tell your own people that look like you got to stop acting a fool.
Now his answer was, here's his answer. I'll give you his answer. He did answer it, Jeff. He said, we don't have any time to do that because we're too busy counter-refuting everything Fox says about us that isn't true.
No, shit.
I never heard of this one that you're talking about, but I do know the number that you can go online and see the president's executive order for excellent education for African-American kids. And he's the only president that we've ever had that came out to say that black kids were undereducated, and he did an executive order and put money where he put the order so that the kids could be educated. And all you got
to
do is go online and look for
why didn't he say
executive
that
order number 13621.
Why didn't he say that?
Well,
he did
do away with the D.C. voucher program, which let young poor children go to schools like secret friends.
With the school system here since
let me tell you something else he done, too. Let me tell you something else he done.
I have never heard of that.
He absolutely did.
I put it in the chat room.
I know you want him to be a good guy so bad.
Call me and give it to me so I can check it out.
Okay, we will.
Pam,
but
just go on.
You know,
go on to...
we want him to be good so bad because he's the first modern day black
it's
president.
Not that I want him to be good anything. All I know is that I am 81 years old, and I have went through a lot of presidents, and I have read about all of them, and none of them has ever done anything especially for black people. I know they talk welfare, they talk about Social Security, but none of those things were instituted for black folks. It was instituted for poor folks, and because they said that we were free, they had to include us in there. See, I was raised in the South. I come out of Alabama. I remember when they first started giving Social Security to old black people that were sharecroppers. It went to the white man who owned the farm that we were sharecropping on, and he had us to sign because we didn't know what the hell it was, and he was taking the money. That's why.
Professional.
I'm looking at it as to what he's doing to try to educate us so that you don't have to be in that condition.
Well, like I say once again, I know what you're saying, that he did make the executive order to improve the education of African Americans, but I'll ask you a question. What did it entail and how is it going to help? Because you're not going to see it when he had black children inside of D.C. that was able to go to the same school as his daughters can go to if they had space and they got in and excelled. They were doing good. Michelle Reeves' records were good, and they tried to say that she was fudging them, and they investigated her and tried to lie, but they couldn't because she was absolutely correct. These are liars. These are people that they're progressives. They don't want you to be anywhere, and he is not the only one that did.
Let's go. Change the paper. Let's go.
George W. Bush did a lot for black education, secondary education. So you can't say that. He put more money in the traditional black colleges than anybody else did ever, even President Obama now. So,
just
like the man said, in the schools that were progressing, they start closing them down.
Well,
that's a white
something.
Secret Friends is a white school.
You got people here in control that don't give a damn about anybody right now. These are people that are looking to control the world. They're called progressives. You have to go do your background on progressives if you want to understand. They want to whittle down the population to 550 million people. You have 7 billion on the planet. Now, how do you get that one done? Why do you think he comes in with an agenda that says more abortion and birth control no matter what? No matter who it offends,
who it affects.
Well, it's not just
abortions and birth control. It's the drugs that come into the inner city. And do you notice that all of a sudden in the paper, they were talking about the bridge up in New Jersey or New York, but now they're talking about this actor that had the overdose?
Yeah.
That's all you can hear now because it happened to somebody they know. I don't even know who the heck he was.
All I know is that he played
all of a sudden he's buying
Seymour.
All them drugs, and they're going to say they suspect that it might be a drug overdose.
Well, it's not only that. They found four people that he called evidently out of his phone and arrested them and are questioning them concerning his death. But that's the thing. When a black person dies like that, they don't care. That's why it's going to be on us to have to make this thing change, or we have to now stop begging for things and go and demand. Look, let us run our own school system for our own kids because you guys are doing nothing for our kids. Nothing.
I agree.
We don't
you
have, you know, you don't have that ability because you vote for the ones that are doing it every time, and you're not going to change. I'm not wanting you to be nothing different. I'm not telling nobody to become a Republican or become anything else. I'm saying.
Let me tell you, this. Republicans or Democrats, in my 81 years, neither one of them has done anything to make it great for me.
Well, I disagree.
Or
have.
Well, she said great. She didn't say better.
No, I'm just saying. Or have. Because
well, they never did anything to make it better for me.
Well, that's not true. It's totally not true. You just didn't know how to make it better. The whole thing is black people poured into the middle class. Now, I don't like this person, but up under Ronald Reagan, they poured into it. Now, why did that happen?
Today's Ronald Reagan's
because
birthday.
They work like they – do you know what? Because of my work ethic.
Well, I'm saying
you could have – the average man was quitting on.
Well,
I worked to give my kids an education so they didn't have to go out there.
You know
they
what,
what am I trying to say? They chose what they wanted to do.
Yeah,
well, you know, I'm going to tell you, Jeff is right.
He opened the system so people could work the system and get things out of it, and your middle class grew larger than it had ever grown since Reconstruction.
Jeff is right because blacks have got – Republicans will give you more leeway where Democrats want to control you.
They want to control everything you do because they can't afford you to be independent.
Right.
See
that all the time.
Frankly,
I'm not a Republican.
Well, we're not talking about you. You just one person.
You
just one person in 39 million, ma'am. Come on now.
That's
you can't use your own self. Let's talk about black people in general. Let's talk
about
the population in general.
I have nothing to do with anybody else how they want to be. And I feel the same way about all the things that everybody.
Well, you're going to have to vote. You're going to have to vote quite often in order to change things with your one vote.
Hey, wait a minute. Let me tell you, if every black person in this country.
Well, see, now there you go. You're talking general now.
One vote, get into one place and vote one way. And
yeah, but see, now you're talking general.
Listen to what I'm saying. If we all decided, say, we're going to be a Republican, and we're all going to vote Republican, and if there was a Democrat over here and all the white people decided we're going to vote a Democrat, our vote wouldn't count anyway. The
well, it would count.
Your vote would count
locally, ma'am. You talk about on a national level.
Number one. So if we got together like that, until we get money, and then we can afford to put lobbyists down there on Capitol Hill. You don't see Chinese people. I don't think there's no Chinese in the Senate or the Congress. But yet,
well, your vote do count locally,
man. Made in China because they have people down there lobbying to get what they want. Money talks and BS walks.
Yeah,
so
well,
unless you get money. I don't care who you are. I don't care what party you belong to. If you don't have the money to put a lobbyist down in Washington, D.C., all your voting is for no.
I'll tell you that you're right and you're wrong at the same time because I'll tell you just what this. In the 60s, we did not have any money, and civil rights legislation got passed.
But
and my
didn't
point
get passed just
is we had a legitimate
people.
Argument.
It got passed because there was money behind it. It got passed because there was people willing to put their lives on the line for it. I come
again.
From Selma, Alabama. I know what happened to get the civil rights vote passed.
Unless nobody's arguing, you're not listening to my point.
Edmund Pettus Bridge, and people were pushing on tear gas and cops.
Everybody I talked to was on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Not people that did that either.
Listen, Ham.
That was people that had
everybody,
money that
was Ham, everybody I talked to said
again,
he was on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Somebody sold it to them.
No, I wasn't on Edmund Pettus Bridge.
I never talked to you. I said
I had family down there that was on there.
I said everybody I talked to said they was on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
So we had to send money down there to help them and until they could find jobs.
Once again, Pam, like I said, we had no money of our own, and somebody listened to our story, and they bought into it.
That's
so the thing is that can happen.
Said.
Listen, that can happen again. But the thing is we are providing a very terrible scenario for this because we haven't even cleaned our own neighborhoods. And our neighborhoods are overrun with drugs, they're overrun with crime and vice. And as a result,
the black leaders have a church on every corner where there's drug dealing, and yet they don't live in the parsonage next to the church. They done moved out into the suburbs.
Well, we got people that are collecting money from us every Sunday,
and say, I'm your leader. If you didn't want drugs on the corner where your church is, then come out the pulpit, come out the pews, and have church on the corner.
Well, once again, I understand, but the thing is you have to be wiser than that.
I ain't talking about no churches today. I'm proud of Jeff.
Exactly. You have to be wiser than that. The pastor is the pastor, and all the other ministers are the ministers, but the people, the sheep, beget sheep. It takes
the
people to rise up and to change this.
They told the sheep to come out there.
I agree with you. That's what I'm saying.
Their community.
We're agreeing.
They don't even go down to the school board, and our schools are dying.
They're not going to do it, though, because they've been taught a paganistic system without relationship with God that they should have. And that's why you got pastors like we have around here that got kids and girlfriends in the church. That's the craziness.
I agree with you. So
well,
what
that,
I'm
see, that's what,
is, when
see,
I
but
look
the thing
in the mirror,
the ones
I see
that, the ones
leader,
that are real,
when I look in the mirror, I
political,
see my leader.
They don't get the political consideration. And so therefore, because guess what? There's nobody in the black community standing up and going up there on Hillman Street and saying, man, what the hell are you doing here? You better stop this stuff. You look like a fool to the rest of us. Nobody's saying it. And he gets paid, you know, every single election day, along with about four others. Oh, I know who gets the checks. I've seen the checks before when they were written. I got friends everywhere. But here's the thing. You can't say nothing if you won't do nothing about it.
Pianchi.
Well, I tell you what I did about it. I came out the building and I started to go in the schools where it's important.
Now, you're right. Pianchi. And you've done a wonderful job.
Is Pianchi still
there?
Matt. Hey,
yeah,
Pianchi.
Yeah,
no, this is Mike. Hey, Pianchi, back then in the day on that bridge, did they have 500 kip steel back then? I didn't know they did.
I think they had to put some shores under the bottom of it.
Tell me about it.
Sure.
Inflatable piers. So.
Well, my wife had a cousin that was involved with that, and if you see the picture of them drawing Martin Luther King's coffin, he's the one. I believe, was he leading the mule, sir? He was the one leading the mule that was the horse that was pulling the king's coffin.
I once saw a cousin.
He was his point man and thing. His last name was, he was an Essex or a Turner? He was a Turner. But
in Atlanta.
Yes.
Pettus. Edmund Pettus Bridge is
I know where Edmund Pettus Bridge is. I'm just saying. He was there for real because he was his point man. He was with them at that march on the Edmund Pettus Mill.
He was alive.
I'm just trying to identify him to you who he was so that when you see a picture of the gentleman guiding the horse, that's that's Cheryl's cousin. Mm. Okay, so we're not untouched by this. We've all had somebody involved somewhere in this movement or somewhere. And there was many of those that were afraid to have a part in this movement. But the thing is you have a worse movement now because you sold yourself away to a party that runs unions that keep you controlled.
Well, Jeff, I'm aware that the Democratic Party was the party of slavery. I know that. I know my history because I read a book one time that said that in order for you to know your history, you have to first learn their history. So I know American history and I know black history.
Well, Pam, let me tell you something. It's them black politicians that's hustling black folks today more so than anybody else.
I agree with you there. Charlie Rankle, Adam Clayton Powell, about the Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharpton. All of them, I understand that they show up where there's money.
Well, no doubt about it, but you remember our basement, and you remember that we had a huge library up against one wall.
Yeah, I know.
And you know, my mother and my father made sure that we got in those books and did stuff. And we had our time to get out there and do what we do, but we better had read and studied some things in those books.
Jeffrey, I always said you should have been a lawyer like your daddy.
Should have, but I didn't want that, and I don't know why, but I didn't want it. But the bottom line is, I will deal with the law of God. I'll be that lawyer right now. But as far as it goes, we have to change this. And if we don't stand up and start doing some things, because, see, I understand. And you know, I got, you know, my man Pianchi on here. We had a big argument yesterday about some things. I understand why people can't stand the church. I understand it. Because the church is full of mess in what we're seeing. But the true church is not full of mess. The real people are out there. There's just not a whole lot of them that you can see. And the Bible tells you there's only a few people that are really going to see this.
Well, Jeff. You know, our problem is we think of a building as a church.
That's true, too.
And a church is not a building. Nope. It is a bunch of called-out people that are set aside, that are called out. So
absolutely.
It has nothing to do with that building and the person that's in that building that says that this is my church. When a preacher say it's his church, I'm out of it anyway because it should be Christ's church.
I heard that because you ain't nothing but an overseer.
That's right.
Ms. Pam and Jeff and Pianchi, I have to run. Duty calls. It's been a pleasure hearing all
of you. Not so blind, Mike. You the man.
Well, hey, so were you, brother.
I'll see you guys tomorrow.
And I'm glad you and Pianchi have patched things up.
Oh, man, we'll argue one day, but I ain't going to stay mad at him. I hope he don't stay mad at me. I have to take a ride down the same road.
You're God of law. I might give y'all a case. You done so good today.
I'm going to run up on you, man.
I'm just glad to see you guys getting along because it did bother me yesterday. Take care, guys.
All right.
Take care, Miss Pam.
Okay.
All right, Auntie. I'll talk to you later.
Jeff? Hey, Jeff.
where you get